Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, September 16th, 2019, Grover Beach City Council meeting. So if you would all rise, please, and join me in a moment of silence for those men and women who have paid the ultimate sacrifice for protecting our company, or excuse me, our country and our freedoms. Thank you for that. So if you would all remain standing, and please join me as we bring forward Merrick Martin Del Campo. So come forward. He's a third grader at Grover Beach, Grover Heights Elementary School. And Merrick tells us that while at school, he enjoys making new friends and doing fun stuff. That's a great thing to do. What he enjoys most about living on the Central Coast is that he lives near the beach and is able to go to the beach whenever he wants. After high school, he would like to pursue a career as a mechanic, just like his dad, who works on engines. In Merrick's spare time, he enjoys playing basketball, football, and he likes video games. So Merrick is here this evening with his mom.
He's at baseball.
Oh, and baseball too? That's a good sport as well. So the big three. So Merrick is here this evening with his mom, who is also a teacher at Grover Heights Elementary, as well as some family members. So Merrick, when you're ready. We do have a certificate for you. Thank you very much. So if you go ahead, and we're going to face the nice lady behind you, and we'll take a photo. Nicely done, and thank you for joining us. So next we will move on to our roll call, please. So City Clerk Sims.
Councilmember Bright.
Here.
Councilmember Lance.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Here.
Mayor Lee.
I am here as well, so we have a quorum, and we will continue to proceed with the meeting. So with that, Mr. City Attorney Hale, if you would give us an announcement from prior closed sessions, please.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Last Council meeting on September the 3rd, we met in closed session related to two matters. One was conference with real property negotiators for the lease of city property. This was in concerning various, at this point in time, undefined city right-of-ways. Agency negotiators were the city manager, city attorney, and the director of community development, and it was with the party RTI Infrastructure, Inc., pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. There was also a public employee performance evaluation. This was for the city attorney, pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1. We convened afterwards in open session, and there were no reportable items.
Very good. Thank you for that. So that will take us into our agenda review. Is there any member of the council that wants to pull an item or for separate configuration or proceed with the agenda as published?
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as published.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. So all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? We will proceed as published. So which then takes us into our ceremonial calendar, where we have a proclamation for Natural Preparedness Month. So if I would please request that the chiefs come forward, and we'll start with a presentation, and then we have a proclamation to read as well. So.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council and community. John Peters, your police chief, and I'm joined today by Steve Lieberman, the Five Cities Fire Chief. And tonight we're going to be giving a presentation, a brief presentation on being prepared for disaster readiness or emergency readiness. This month of September is National Preparedness Month, and as such, we always like to remind our community on how to better prepare themselves in response for a disaster or other type of an emergency event that may occur. And as the slide states, it is National Preparedness Month, and we like to promote and make sure that the family and community in disaster emergency planning now, prior to the emergency, would be the best for the community. There's a lot of information out there that you can get both on the FEMA website as well as the ReadySlow.org website that has recently been started. And so there's good information to go off of. The basics are to have a plan. Train your family on that plan. And the plan can consist of not just emergency plan, but it could be a evacuation plan and a reunification plan. So if there's an emergency that does strike the area, that you should have a good plan with your family to evacuate, whether it be your home or the community, go to a safe location, or reunify with one another so that way there you can get back faster to the recovery process. Also, it's very important to have emergency kits. The emergency kit, there's a lot of them out online, and there's a lot of great information on where to find them through FEMA's website as well as the ReadySlow.org website. I tell our employees, prepare for 10 days of an emergency kit. Though the standard that everybody is being told is 3 days, given the incidents that we've had around the nation where floods or tornadoes or in California firestorms, 10 days is probably a very good and safe bet kit to have on hand. Also, a lot of things that people forget to plan for when preparing a kit is your pets. Our pets are just a part of our family as well, and so it's very important to prepare for their medicines, their food, make sure that everybody in the family has water, including the pets. And then prepare financially. Have duplicate copies of your financial documents, any of the trust documents or estate documents, passports, other forms of identification. Always have those on hand ready to go in the same place as your kits. So that's the basics for an emergency kit. Steve?
Thank you, Chief. So talking about our risks in this county, I'm basing the risks that are identified on our monitors on what's called a local hazard mitigation plan. Communities are required by FEMA to have these plans in place that identify risk, mitigation measures, response measures, and recovery measures from any such known emergency. This list mirrors what's going on in the county for the most part. As you can imagine, wildfire threat is real in the county of San Luis Obispo. We do have very limited exposure in the city of Grover Beach when you think about our open space boundaries. Earthquake, we're in California. Earthquake is a very real hazard that we should be preparing for. We have building codes and fire codes and all of these other things in anticipation of a seismic event to make sure our homes can stand up to whatever the magnitude of that earthquake is as best as possible. Tsunami and flooding, this is what's called is a low-risk, high-acuity type event. We don't anticipate a tsunami, but there are tsunami plans in this county. There's actually modeled maps showing inundation zones and flooding zones for Grover Beach and the rest of the South County. Flooding is mentioned separately from tsunami in the event of maybe a breach at the dam at Lopez Lake and what that could mean downstream for folks like us. Hazardous materials are a real risk that we plan for, whether it's a facility, manufacturing facilities such as California Fine Wire. It's a very professionally run organization, but they use a lot of chemicals that are toxic. Or the Highway 101 corridor is a really well-traveled route full of delivery vehicles with hazardous materials, whether they're petroleum products or FedEx or UPS delivery truck. We just certainly don't know what's on those vehicles. So hazmat is mentioned throughout the county for that. And then we have a new addition known as the public safety power shutoff. And as many of you know, because I do have props, we're receiving in the mail notices from PG&E. Yesterday's paper, there was a full-page ad talking about these these public safety power shutoffs that the California Public Utilities Commission has allowed PG&E and other electrical providers to plan for. And this is a very real risk that we should be planning for along with our day-to-day planning efforts. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the public safety power shutoff, or PSPS, specific to what we're sharing with you and the community tonight. I'm still talking. Oh, well, certainly. So, again, I already shared that the state and the governor's office have allowed all electrical providers, including PG&E, to proactively turn off power to users in high fire severity conditions. That would be in areas with high heat, high fuel, meaning dead brush that will burn easily, red flag warnings, and wind events. Those are four of the components that would go into a possible consideration of a PSPS event. It doesn't matter if that red flag warning is somewhere far away from Grover Beach, as long as it's in the path of one of our transmission lines that's running from the Central Valley. If you think about the Highway 46 East corridor, that's a key place where you would see some of these weather conditions. And the two transmission lines that we receive go into the Morro Bay switching facility. So if the company were to make a proactive decision to shut off power somewhere along that path, it could have a significant impact to the county of San Luis Obispo. PG&E has said they are going to make every effort to provide 48 hours notice, again within 24 hours, and then an imminent shutoff notice. The electricity could be off for several days. So even if the electricity is off for 3 days, it could take the company another 3 to 4 days to inspect the infrastructure and make any needed repairs. So as a county, our planning assumptions for a PSPS event is actually 7 days without power. And that's a big number for people at home to consider, especially those that are using medical equipment that's dependent on electrical power. So we've done a lot of planning, Chief Peters and I and others, Public Works, city managers, other organizations within the county. We've really been actively planning for this. And there are resources out there besides the PG&E materials that are flooding our mailboxes. We have documents that are available this evening, a power shutoff planning document that we have if anyone would like one. And as Chief Peters mentioned, there's a lot of resources online. CPUC, the Public Utilities Commission, PG&E's got information. ReadySlow.org, the new website that our County Office of Emergency Services has put online. And there's a lot of emergency preparedness at the Five Cities Fire Authority website as well.
Well, that concludes our presentation on the slide presentation, and at this point, we'll entertain any questions or comments.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation, gentlemen. So is there any questions that we have for the chiefs?
Just a brief follow-up. Talking about having a plan for a family, I mean, what does that mean? Having a meeting spot, or what is that?
Well, it would start with identifying, you know, everybody that's in the family, if you have extended family that lives in the area as well. But, yes, in the home, you want to develop a plan if, just in case, if, say, an earthquake hits and the home is not inhabitable, where would everybody exit the home from? Where would you meet on a rendezvous point? If you're living near a park or right down the street, you want to identify with the kids where that rendezvous point will be. And then you want to practice that plan. Make sure that everybody knows how to get out, because things in an emergency may not look the same. And then once you have that practice in place, developing the other part of the plan is getting the materials together, the water, the food, clothing, first aid kits, all that stuff together in an emergency kit for the family. Now, the larger the family, the more kits that you're going to have. I personally have 3 emergency kits at my home, and they're on wheels, so they're easy to tow behind and drag down the street, kind of like a duffel bag if you're going through the airport. So it makes it easier to just pull that stuff and go right out the door and get to a safe place. And then once you have those rendezvous points and your equipment with you, and you have your financial documents in place, then you want to get with your extended family members in the area and finalize where you want to end up. It's obviously going to be based on what's going on and what type of emergency that the area is facing. So,
I'd just like to add a couple of items to Chief Peters' his pretty comprehensive response is when you start thinking about what you need for a kit, you start by thinking, I need a gallon of water per person per day. So you can see how quickly this kit is going to grow in size. When we're talking about financial preparation, I would strongly suggest that you have cash money along with your other financial documents, especially if you have maybe $5 and dollar bill denominations, because whether it's a PSPS or an earthquake, anytime we lose power, we're going to lose banking capacity and ATMs and the ability to use our credit cards at gas stations or to purchase goods. So the saying is cash is king, so you really need to plan for that as well. And then not remember that you've got $300 in your emergency kit and you need $40 to go grocery shopping. You have to be disciplined. I struggle with that. Don't forget your pets, and also don't forget any medications that you may require.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just maybe the city manager or one of the chiefs can also say, give us and the community assurance that we as a city are doing preparedness for maintaining or making sure that the water delivery is still available to the extent possible, sewer services is available to the extent possible, and other city services that may be critical are going to then be continued to the extent possible. So, City Manager, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Yes, we are actively working on our own response to any of these scenarios, especially the possibility of a power shutoff. So I've been coordinating with our two chiefs, with our Public Works Director, with my fellow city managers around the area, with the SAND District, other agencies, to make sure we are coordinated and responding to keep our continuity of services going. For us, the main impacts are for water, wastewater conveyance, not treatment, but the conveyance down the lines. Obviously, public safety impacts. So we are focused on continuing our level of service that the community expects their city government to maintain, even in the event of a power shutoff where we may have several days where we are not with power. We're making sure we have enough fuel for our generators. We're making sure we have enough supplies and provisions for our folks who will be working here in the Emergency Operations Center if we activate it. So this work is going on. I want to assure the council and community that their city government is taking this very seriously and devoting significant time and attention to making sure we maintain our services to the best of our ability.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, one and all, for those updates and that presentation. And so now we do have a proclamation that I'd like Councilmember Bright to lead to read in terms of National Preparedness Month.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. This is a proclamation of the City Council declaring September 2019 as National Preparedness Month. Whereas National Preparedness Month is recognized each September to promote family and community disaster and emergency planning now and throughout the year. The 2019 theme is Prepared, Not Scared. And whereas our region, like other areas in California, faces various risks to prepare for, including wildfires, earthquakes, flooding, hazardous materials, and long-lasting power outages, and when access to resources and the availability of services is limited, it is important to have an emergency supplies kit. And for an emergency supply kit, you should collect and protect important paperwork, including an emergency action plan, insurance documents, and medical, vital, and immunization records. And it should also include personal needs, including provisions, supplies, and equipment necessary to protect the health and safety of your family in an emergency. And a long-lasting power outage can disrupt medical services, pharmacies, and can be life-threatening for people who rely on electric-powered medical equipment. And you should prepare for a prolonged blackout with an emergency power plan and backup and alternative power sources. And learning basic do-it-yourself skills to stay healthy and safe until help arrives if necessary. And always call 911 first in a life-threatening emergency are practical skills. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby proclaims September 2019 as National Preparedness Month and encourages all citizens to be prepared, not scared.
Thank you. Shall we meet the chiefs down here and take a photo?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. And as always, so you were well prepared and a symbol of what we strive to be as a community, which is prepared, not scared. Thank you very much. So next we do have a presentation, which is we're going to bring up Peter Williamson from SLOCOG, where he's going to identify a rideshare pledge that we should all take for Rideshare Week, October 7th to the 11th. Mr. Williamson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Lee, council members, Grover Beach. My name is Peter Williamson. I'm the programs coordinator at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. SLOCOG is our region's agency responsible for transportation planning and funding. A rideshare program has, you know, something for the K through 12 schools, parents, teachers, kids, and we have our commuter program, 511, for traveling, et cetera. So we are here to talk about the start of your October, kick it off right with some cool things. So speaking of emergency preparedness, what if your car breaks down and you have to, how are you going to get to work? So maybe we could solve that problem right here. But first, any parents with kids in here tonight? No? That's like a couple kids in Grover Beach? Perfect. Good. Happy to announce International Walk to School Day is Wednesday, October 2nd this year. We have over 45 schools participating, representing over 6,000 kids so far and counting. I think we're missing a few from the Lucien Mar district, so make sure that your kid's school is involved. We'll do some cool giveaways, some stickers. Mayor Lee's representing one, but we actually have some cooler stickers, too, so don't worry if that doesn't look super awesome to you. Four decades ago, since the 70s, kids are there's 10 times as many obese kids, so it's important. I don't know about your parents, your grandparents, myself, we walked uphill both ways, so it's good that the kids get out and experience the walking and the biking. Remember, being active is really important in life. So check that out at slowsaferoutes.org. And then, of course, like all our rideshare weeks in the past few years, we ask you to pledge to do your part. We have more ways than ever to get involved. And each thing that you accomplish is a chance to win $500. So you could share your feedback. Maybe you have some ideas. How can we solve the whole theme this year, as you can see, is a little bit puzzle-based. So how can we solve this traffic puzzle? I mean, there's so many cars with so few seats filled. Maybe we fill some seats. I don't know. You might have some ideas to share your feedback. Maybe you can take that first step, send the carpool message, or you can ride your bike or carpool, take a vanpool, try the bus, anything. And check out all the ways to pledge and do your pledge at supercommuter.org. And then we also have a lot of cool events. We actually have this one called Parking Day to kick off Rideshare Week. I was just talking to Kathy about the idea of maybe doing one here in Grover. I've been talking to AG, and they're giving me the runaround. So, hey, we should do it here. We got the Parks Department. Parking Day is saying, hey, land use. We spend a lot of land use on where cars park, and what if we reimagine what that space looks like? So you can kind of see a setup here where there's some games, and so well, some free food, some games, some good times. We got this pretty sweet-looking Connect 4 that I'm really excited about, so come out and enjoy it. It's going to be Friday, October 4th. We'll do it sometime during your lunch break, so if you're in the Five Cities area and we do end up doing it here, keep an eye on the supercommuter.org for more details. We'll have a lot of other events, too, throughout Rideshare Week, and so if you happen to be near any of those, you're welcome to swing by. We'll see you there. And then some bonus perks. Let's talk about Waze Carpool. Does anybody have the Waze app for kind of seeing where traffic is? There's always a few. Okay, good. So Waze, pretty cool little app from Google, shows you where the traffic conditions are. Maybe you divert around it, shows you where a speed trap might be, something like that. There's a little guy in the bottom corner, and Waze says, hey, you've been driving a lot. What about if you shared the ride? So if you share the ride, we will give you up to $15 per way. It's 54 cents per mile. If you are the carpool person, you get the Waze Carpool app, and it's $2 rides for Rideshare Week. So California Rideshare Week is October 7th through the 11th. Anytime during that week you want to share the ride, I mean, you can do it now and after, but Waze for the drivers, Waze Carpool for the riders, $2 rides up to $15 for the driver. So, I mean, you don't want to miss that for sure. Also, a lot of free transit opportunities. If you never tried Slow RTA or South County Transit, we'd be happy to set you up with a free tri-transit pass. Slow Transit's free all week long, and Morro Bay Transit on Thursday during that week, so that'll be the 10th. All right, then we also have our challenges, commuter challenges at rideshare.org, and so there's a few different categories, 3 for employers, 1 that's team, you and any 9 people, and then an individual, and it's how many vehicle miles traveled can you reduce? Maybe you bike to the coffee shop you always drive to, you try the bus to that weekend event you're planning on going to anyways, and so you'll just log your trips at rideshare.org, and we'll have these cool title trophies that we've put together. And this year, also, everybody loves free food. We found that out at some point. And so we have this sweet little food truck. There's going to be a bonus challenge. I can't give you all the details yet, but all the teams that are in the top places, they're going to get into this bonus challenge, and they'll win a food truck for their top competitors. So, again, that's at iRideShare.org. You check it out. That's pretty much it. We have some exciting things at the beginning of October. We hope you'll join us. Any questions?
Very good. Thank you for that discussion. So any questions of Mr. Williamson? Very good. So actually, I do have one quick question. At the RTA meeting or at the SLOCOG meeting recently, there was a new app that was announced called Token Transit. So if you can just kind of mention that a little bit as you're talking about the bus fares and so forth, you can actually purchase them through an app.
Yeah, very exciting. So there's an app. If you just go to the Play Store or the Apple, whatever they call that store, you can kick the Token Transit, and you can buy your RTA or Slow Transit passes, and you just show that to the driver when you board. They haven't turned on the beacons yet. But pretty soon you'll be able to scan it on the bus, give you the nice little, like, beep, and you're like, yes, I rode the bus today. I feel good about that. But yeah, it's coming. It's all ready now. Just download the app, buy the ticket, show it to your driver, and hop on a bus with your credit card. It's kind of nice because you used to have to go to all these places to buy, you know, your physical pass. So it's a big deal. Great question. You're gonna bike?
And actually, week? I actually got a bike now.
Okay.
So yes.
Ride with us. We got a good group.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Peter. Appreciate Thanks. That. So. Very good. So that will complete our presentation calendar this evening. So that will take us into public communications, where this time we will allow public communications with additional comments as necessary towards the end of the meeting. So this is a time for the public to speak on any item to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. So, and if you do anticipate that your comments are going to be in addition to or exceed 3 minutes, I will ask you to wrap those comments up at about the three-minute mark, and you can either talk faster or you can also always provide your comments in writing via the city clerk. So with that, I do have several public speakers this evening, and we'll start with Mr. John Weisong, followed by Liz Dukas.
I'm John A. Weisong. I happen to be a step ahead because my youngest son has taken over, and he took me to the insurance company. We found out about the property and the life insurance last week with the living trust, and she explained everything. So we're ahead. But tonight I want to say, because of the younger generation doesn't have the minds on the business at hand, so constructive criticism never hurt anyone. It's a damn truth that hurts. I have watched politicians, Grover Beach, San Luis County, and so my grandkids I'm proud of, but I hate for them to see the stupidity that goes on. The knowledge of the fact that makes the world go around, they listen to me. My grandkids are of common knowledge and practical spirits, and all has a lot to do with common sense. Thank God. I have a 11-year-old great-grandson that could take care of the cattle business if he could drive. I've watched San Luis County planners last Thursday talking about water. They were lost for words to taxpayers who wanted to have answers about alfalfa and their crops. That was for the supervisors who make six figures and no answers to water and health. The most important part of life and food is water and health. In all five medical places I go to, medical, on the walls are the most important things in life that people need is water, health, and food. No mention of houses like California wants, millions, and concern. Water and highways built in the late 1940s and 50s. There is no common knowledge, practical experience, so any common sense, reasoning, and planning for today or tomorrow, the future, of the great-grandchildren and grandchildren. So, politicians think of themselves only. San Luis County, poor managers. I got on a phone Friday a.m. before going to the vets. And I called the White House, and I talked to this young lady very nice. And I asked her if it's true that President Trump is coming to California this week. And she said yes. And I said, I have some things to say. And I'm a 86-year-old Korean vet, and I've been around this country. I know I've been across 25 times driving. I've seen it all. I've been in thousands of towns. I know what they do out there. And I said, I would like for you to tell
President Trump. Thank you for those comments, Sean. Thank you.
Just what I said. And she said she would. But it was pitiful that the county.
Thank you, John.
Can't figure out how to do it. And yeah.
Thank you for your comments.
A thing called reverse osmosis.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Weisong. Please, no outbursts from the. Please, no outbursts from the audience. This is a time for. This is an opportunity for people to speak. Ms. Dukas, please. Your comments will be followed by Mike Richmond. And I will, and before you start, so I will ask that if there is any clapping, we have a disparity of opinions in this audience. If you agree with someone, use jazz hands. Please no clapping. So as that gives everybody an opportunity to be heard and to be civil. So Ms. Dukas, your time starts now.
Thank you, and I would request a few an extra minute. Elizabeth Dukas, North Grover Beach.
I will provide you 3 minutes, and I'll allow you to
wrap
up your comments.
I will request a few extra minutes. I am here tonight in a continued effort to inform the public of the draining of our general fund and taxpayer dollars as a result of continuing and incessant litigation that we, the citizens, ultimately have to bear the costs of. In reference to the lawsuit against the City of Gover Beach, complaint for damages and equitable adjustment to contract price in the matter of V. Lopez Jr. and Sons versus the City of Gover Beach, I find it distressing that the first cause of action is for breach of contract by the city for deficiencies resulting in dozens of work stoppages which led to increased costs, erroneous drawings resulting in unforeseen conditions and extra work, and that the city failed to meet its obligations under California's prompt payment statuses. Another case I'll reference here is the City of Gover Beach versus Casey Johnson Construction, which claims a public nuisance that, quote, any ordinary person would be reasonably annoyed or disturbed, etc., to the operation of a construction business in a residential neighborhood, creating a public nuisance and failure to possess a home occupation permit to operate any commercial enterprise at the property, end quote. Much like I have witnessed with the Regali Security Company running a business out of a residential neighborhood and destroying the lives of those around them, yet one is pursued, one is ignored, selective enforcement or negligence. Regardless, their affirmative defenses of being sued by the city were shocking. They are the same or very similar to the complaints that I have alleged about my ongoing nuisance from failure to comply with the Gover Beach municipal codes that have been requested and enforced, and city officials have refused to do since issuing not one but two notices of violations in August and September of 2010 when the city attorney stepped in and stopped enforcement. However, now they are using to sue this company. It reeks of selective enforcement. As affirmative defenses, the defendant stated, among many others, consent, statutory authority in that the city allowed defendants specific authority to do the things that the city now complains of, prevention, frustration, improper notice of breach, fraud, illegality, unclean hands, which is the city's own conduct, failure to act in a governmentally responsible manner, and selective enforcement. Selective enforcement has plagued this city. Why? So here the city sues, as it should have in my case, for failure to comply, but yet the city went along with it. Now we are in the circle of what the city will allow on one hand to connect it, perhaps, but yet sue on the other, costing our citizens millions in litigation costs, which would have prevented the K-14 bond for street repair and infrastructure. And especially in light of the 2015...
Thank you for those comments.
I'm not done,
Thank you
Mr.
For those
Mayor.
Comments.
I asked for extra time.
And also, as I said at the beginning...
And you have allowed other people...
Excuse me, Chief. Thank you. So there are no public outbursts this evening, please. So I ask that you... And I also indicated that if you were... Ms. Dukas? As I indicated at the top of public comments, thank you, and you may please give that information to the city manager, please. So thank you for your participation this evening. As I did say at the beginning. So, Chief, if you would please escort that young woman out of the office, out of the chambers, please. Mr. Mike Richmond, I see that you have Section 5210, Ordinance 21 revision. Is that public comment, or is it? I don't see anything on that.
Just public comment, yes.
Perfect. Then, Mr. Richmond, followed by Catherine Sells.
Hopefully this will become an agenda item. That's my intent. My name is Mike Richmond. I reside at 612 Seabright here in Grover Beach. I share my time between Grover and Bakersfield, California. And I'm here today to request that... I know city ordinances and municipal codes get updated from time to time to bring them current, and that ordinance, this is referred to as three different things, Ordinance 21, Section 5210, or Municipal Code 5210, whichever rings a bell with any of you. But it pertains to the parking of RVs on the city streets at night is the gist of it. And my concern is that I myself have been a violator of this. But this ordinance is so outdated that it really needs a current review. It does not allow you to park your vehicle overnight. You can park, in my instance, I come over in my RV. I want to park in front of my own house. I can do that during the day, but legally I cannot be parked in front of my own house at night. And there is a provision in your ordinance that... allows you to park overnight if it's for emergency repairs or something of that nature, but that's the only exception that I've seen. And I think the ordinance needs to be made more homeowner friendly, and you know, any reasonable person needs to be able to deal with this in some fashion or manner. That is my only presentation, and if there's any questions.
Very good. Actually, we'll appreciate your public comment on that, and then we may take that up into consideration later on in the meeting. So we can't address anything specifically, but we can see if there's a consensus on the council to either get an update from the city manager or to potentially agendize this in the future.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. So next up, I have Catherine Sells, followed by my last speaker slip, which is Deborah. I'm going to apologize how I always say your last name. Ugald.
I'm Catherine Sells. I live on Mentone. I would like to propose that Grover Beach once again take the lead in the county, this time in a real ban of single-use plastic straws and stir sticks for coffee. For full disclosure, I need to tell you that I have a very small business selling reusable stainless steel and hard plastic straws in fabric cases with cleaning brushes. I do very little promotion, and I've given away more than I have sold. I started it for environmental reasons, not for the money. In March 2018, the city of San Luis Obispo initiated an ordinance that requires restaurants to give patrons straws only on request. Many restaurants in other parts of the county are now doing that, but it's really not enough. Before leaving office, Governor Brown signed into law AB 1884, effective January 1, 2020, which bans single-use plastic straws only in restaurants which seat and serve customers at their tables, a fairly weak bill that doesn't cover bars, fast food restaurants, convenience stores, where most of the single-use straws come from. This is a beach community. We need to show that we care about our beaches and this amazingly beautiful landscape where we live. Plastic straws can't be recycled. They get caught in the machinery used in the recycling process and gum up the works. They're a hazard to marine and land animals. They don't decompose, but they break up and are ingested by animals and wreak havoc on their organs. New studies show that these microplastics may be migrating to animal tissue. We may be ingesting them ourselves as we eat seafood. There are incredible paper straws now on the market in all sizes, lengths, wrapped, unwrapped, bendable, different colors, even stirrers for coffee and tea, all made to decompose. A great deal of research has been done to make certain that the glue will also decompose. And if given only on request, the price is not prohibitive. I've brought samples from one company to leave with you. I've heard that proponents of the disabled don't want a ban because persons with disabilities need bendable straws. First, I've never seen a restaurant that offers bendable plastic straws, only in hospitals. However, there are paper straw manufacturers who offer bendable paper straws. I really believe that this can and should be done. Food vendors can be given a reasonable amount of time to use up the supply of straws that they have in stock before the ban goes into effect and have the opportunity to find the best price for paper replacements.
Very good. If you actually would leave your straws with the city clerk or the city manager, that would be appreciated. Thank you for those comments. Next up, we have Deborah Ugald. And then if there is anyone else who wants to speak under public comment, please fill out a speaker slip.
Thank you. Good evening to the mayor and all of the city council members. I come bringing some good news. We are a member of a founding corporation. We are trying to bring a children's discovery center to the Central Coast. We are currently looking for a large location, say about 20,000 square feet. We want to incorporate all the STEAM activities, the science, technology, education, art, and math, all in hands-on and interactive things. Our museum will have a large historical cultural side. We plan on opening with a large pyramid where the kids can get the feel of it. They can, using the wizardry of PCPA set designers and melodrama set designers, they can enter into the pyramid, see the sarcophagus and the mummy, and feel the Egyptian vibe. This particular part of the museum would change every 3 months, and it would go from Egypt to Greece to Rome to China, and our kids would have a chance to see and touch global things. At this point, most of us travel 3 hours to 4 hours north or 3 hours to 4 hours south to have a similar situation, a similar experience for our kids and our grandkids. We see that there are large buildings that are vacant and could easily be turned into these. So we have started a corporation, Children's Discovery Center of the Central Coast, and we hope to have this up and running. We'd like community support, and I wanted to let you know what was going on. I will leave some flyers with you so that you will know how we're starting. We have a website started as well. So.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for those comments.
So may I ask a question?
Oh, yes.
Can we get the name of your website, please?
It is CD-CCC, Children's
One
Discovery.
Time. One more time.
CD-CCC.
Thank you.
.org. We tried to make it easy. Okay. You're Thank good. You very much.
Thank you for those comments, and we'll look forward to your progress as you continue the startup. Very good. Thank you.
If you would like to invite me back for a slideshow at any time, I would love to do that.
Very good. I think the city manager has your information, so we may do that in the near future. Thank you. So is there any other member of the public that wants to speak under public comment? You may not, Ms. Dukas. I apologize. I did give you 3 minutes, but thank you very much. So that will close public comment this evening. So we will continue towards responses. Actually, Ms. Dukas, I am going to have the city attorney respond if you did want to stay for a moment. So actually, if I would allow the city manager and the city attorney to respond with respect to the allegations of creative enforcement, which I believe have a very definitive answer, and in the fact that the city is not doing in selective enforcement. So, Mr. Hale, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not exactly sure what litigation Ms. Dukas is referring to. We have had up to about four. One of those was the Fear and Long case where we were defendants. We were dismissed out of that lawsuit after discovery on the basis of that they had absolutely no cause of action against the city. There was very little cost, if any, because CJPIA paid for all of the expenses. We currently are litigating the case of the Friends of the Dunes related to the issuance of a CEQA document by the California Coastal Commission. We were able to maneuver the position of the city into a real priority in interest, basically meaning our litigation costs are almost nil. We are not a defendant in that case. case of V. Lopez on threat of demur. They have withdrawn their complaint, and they are, in fact, saying they're going to refile. They have not at this point in time, so I don't consider that an active litigation case. In the case of Casey Johnson, was settled successfully on behalf of the city. Casey Johnson's case is one where in those particular causes of actions that we brought against him were in direct violation of provisions of our code. The particular house that's been referenced by Ms. Dukas is not in violation of any of our codes, and we have in comprehensive manner in numerous correspondence advised her of why they are not, and I have offered for direction or insight from Ms. Dukas as to any specific violations of our code she can point to, and on not one occasion has she submitted anything to my office. As of this point in time, we have one outstanding lawsuit, and for a city of this size is basically very minimal litigation and is not unreasonable for any city to have one outstanding viable lawsuit.
Very good. So, thank you for those comments. Ms. Dukas, thank you. Mr. City Manager, if you would, please. Chief. Mr. Bronson. So there was another gentleman that spoke this evening with regards to the RV parking potential ordinance revision. So have we as a city considered revising that, or is that part of an upcoming ordinance revision that might be considered?
We are looking at the possibility of various code enforcement revisions to our city code as directed by the council earlier this year. In particular, we're looking at code regarding parking in landscaped areas and other areas. To date, the issue of RV parking has not been one of the items that we are tracking in this code enforcement update. We certainly could do that if provided direction from the council to explore this further and bring this back to you for further information later this fall.
So what's the timing for the ordinance revisions to come back for the council?
We were looking to bring back a code enforcement update and discussion around those code changes in the November timeframe.
Very good. Thank you. So is there any desire by the council to add RV parking, overnight potential street parking, to the ordinance and the code enforcement revisions?
I think as we're all to be discussing parking on unlandscaped areas, I think that a lot of people do park their RVs on unlandscaped areas, so it could be fused appropriately.
It would be fairly easy to include that in our updates and with what we bring back to you if that's the desire of the council to move in that direction.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it's good to include. I want to hear from different people in the public and how they feel about it.
Very good. So that is consensus. So we'll look forward to having that update in the November timeframe. And Mr. Richmond, we do have your speaker slip, and so I'm sure the city clerk will add you to the list of interested parties when that does come before us again. So very good. Great. So that does conclude our public comments.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
I just want to ask the city attorney. So I just want to make sure I heard you, because you gave a updates on all litigation, and if I heard Ms. Dukas correctly, she was citing the Lopez litigation, and she wanted to keep reading from it, but what did you say was going on with Lopez right now?
Lopez filed a complaint. In our opinion, it was not artfully worded. Under the law, you have to do a meet and confer before you file a demur, and a demur is basically saying to the court that notwithstanding they have served you with a complaint, they have not appropriately pleaded the necessary elements of that and therefore are not stating an appropriate cause of action, and the court will usually essentially give the plaintiff an opportunity to amend his complaint. But you have to go through a meet and confer process first. We did. We called the attorney. We said, do you really want us to file a demur? If so, this is what we're going to argue before the court. He said, no, hold off. I'll go back and readdress the issues that you've raised in my complaint. Therefore, we have a stipulation with the plaintiff that we do not have to answer the complaint, And currently, there is really no active complaint out there for which we are in need of answering until such time as he amends it and refiles.
So currently, until
such time as he does, technically, you don't have a lawsuit.
And I guess if you could just give me an estimate, how many hours do you think you've given to Ms. Dukas's claims on this neighbor situation over the years?
It's been a lot. I would have to hazard a guess of 40 to 50 hours of time
and so
in researching.
You've looked at it. It's just you don't agree with her assertion. Her assertion,
I can boil it down to 30 seconds, is that an internal stairwell was removed in the property. Notices of violation were filed many, many years ago. They ultimately corrected those notices of violations. They got permits from the city for doing it. The city ultimately inspected it and signed off on it. So there was no attempt on the part of my predecessor, nor on my part, to ever stop the enforcement of an active notice of violation. Her claim is that that creates a duplex and it's in violation of our zoning ordinance. We have had our expert plan checkers look at that and have found no requirement under the code that says you can't have an exterior stairwell that connects a first and second story to a house. In fact, they're quite common in Europe because of the size of the houses being very small. You don't want an internal stairwell taking up space. That's what this homeowner did. It is not a violation of our code. It does not create a duplex, and it is not a violation of our zoning ordinances.
So, City Attorney, you estimate you've given this 40 to 50 hours. City Manager, how much staff time have you given Ms. Dukas?
I would say that between the community development staff and myself, we also are probably in that same ballpark, 40 to 50 hours, if not more, given the response that we have provided over the years in reviewing the incidents, reviewing the information, sending inspectors, coordinating with the city attorney. It has been a very significant staff effort.
All right. Well, thank you.
And I'll just follow, Ms. Bright.
So just to kind of clarify things here a bit, Ms. Dukas has taken this past our city, is that correct? And has she not taken this further to another level, to another attorney? Did she not ask someone else to look into this? And
we've been dealing with this for a long, long, long time. I do not recall that she's ever engaged an attorney who has contacted me on this issue. I don't remember having had a discussion, but certainly she's not actively represented as I understand it currently with an attorney.
So basically it's just she's not satisfied with the answers that the city has given her.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Nothing to add.
Okay. Very good. So I just want to say actually thank you to city staff and to city attorney for spending the time that a citizen of Grover Beach has brought forward, whether that person agrees with us or disagrees with us. As you can see, city staff has gone the extra mile to address those comments, continues to address those comments, and without any additional information, there can be a disagreement on both sides. The city is proceeding to do what it needs to do to make sure that the laws and the regulations are enforced, of which the city attorney has opined to Ms. Dukas several times. The city manager has spent time with her and other members of the community whenever there's disagreement. So I do want to say thank you to staff for your diligent efforts with respect to that. But to bring this to a close, we have spent enough time on that item this evening. And we will proceed to our consent agenda. So where we have one, two, three, four, five different items this evening, ranging from a treasurer's report for the city to a treasurer's report for our 2017 bond account, meetings of the city council of Tuesday, September 3rd, an introduction and first reading of a signed ordinance, and an authorization to amend the memorandum of understanding with the City of Grover Beach employee groups per side letter agreements. Is there any member of the council that wants to ask specific questions on an item or pull for separate discussion?
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
I would like to pull item number 6, introduction, first reading of an ordinance to amend the sign ordinance, just to provide an opportunity for the city manager to discuss where we're at in that process. It's obviously quite a chunky piece of legal framework, and I want to make sure the public understands that we are going to be discussing this at much more length than tonight and what that process looks like.
Very good. So we'll take that for separate consideration. Any other requests from council members? Okay. I just do have a quick item. As I was reading through the council meeting minutes, I do have an item there just to add one of the speakers under the housing discussion. Previously, the county representative, Ms. Carolyn Berg, was omitted after Mr. Molinek. So with that, is there any member of the public that wants to speak on any items that are on the consent calendar this evening? Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back and look for a motion on items 3, 4, 5, and 7.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Looks like we have a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So those that does carry. So we'll go ahead and bring item 6 forward and allow Mr. Bronson a quick introduction for that. And then, yes, we will have a second reading on this, depending upon where this next discussion goes.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As Councilmember Lance indicated, what's before the council is an introduction and first reading of an ordinance to revise the city's sign regulations, which were last touched in 1981. So they're a little bit outdated, about 40 years in the making. And what's before the council is just to begin the process of considering the amendments as in the public dialogue. We'll come back at the next meeting on October 7th with the public hearing and asking the council to do a second reading and consider adoption of the ordinance. So that will really be the merit hearing and discussion around the content of the ordinance. But just to give some flavor as to what's coming forward, because this is a very, very substantial item. It's been a long time coming. This was part of your council's work program back in 2018-19, and staff has been working on this, but we also have a number of other priorities that have come forward in the last year and a half. So it's now time to bring this ordinance forward. It's coming to you with a recommendation from the Planning Commission, which has reviewed this over two different meetings earlier this summer. Just a few brief highlights. This ordinance has a lot of additional specificity for sign types that are not included in the current sign regulations. The ordinance addresses temporary signs, which are not addressed in our current regulations, things like yard signs, A-frame signs, banners, different signs that we see in our everyday landscape. We did listen closely to public comments that we've been receiving, particularly from groups like the Realtor Association, business groups, and we've looked to strike a reasonable common sense balance, particularly in things like directional real estate open house signs, to address those in the context of our ordinance. We've also tried to really focus on creating an ordinance that is fair, equitable, consistent, easier to implement than our current regulations. We're working on ways to help really work towards compliance with enforcement really as a last resort. Our goal is to achieve voluntary compliance with these new regulations, given that they're 40 years in the making. And we also want to make sure that we have the right resources in place from a code enforcement standpoint. So we'll discuss all that at the hearing coming up on October 7th. We will continue to work with stakeholder groups such as the Chamber of Commerce and the Realtor Association to make sure that their voices are heard in the process. But we're very pleased to finally bring the updated sign ordinance to a council near you coming up here in just a few weeks.
Very good. So thank you for that quick presentation. Any specific questions?
Just a follow-up question to confirm, there'll be a staff presentation at the next meeting.
That is correct. We'll have a very comprehensive staff presentation. The report that was in your packet today, which will be in your packet again October 7th, has a lot of good visuals. This is this topic that lends itself for visuals of what is proposed to be allowed and not allowed, and we'll make sure to have all those visuals coming up in the presentation.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions to my left?
I have a comment.
Very good. Go ahead and comment away.
I greatly appreciated the visuals. I did. Seriously. It made it really very easy to understand. I really appreciated just the whole layout of the agenda item. It was very comprehensive, and so I look forward to the public meeting.
And I will pass along those comments to our community development staff, who did a fantastic job shepherding this through. Also thank our city attorney, who has provided invaluable legal guidance and advice in this complex landscape.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Not at this time. I'll have some in 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
And actually, I will have questions in a couple weeks as well, but I did want to give just two comments so that staff can be prepared. As part of the proposed exempt signage, mm-hmm. there's on page 4 of the report, there's a temporary window sign, bless you, that are identified. And I was just curious if there was any discussion either at the Planning Commission or internally with regards to length of time that those temporary window signs would be allowed. And so, again, don't need to respond this evening, but just looking to have that as a potential discussion item when this comes back to us. And then next page, page 5, there was a prohibition against backlit awning signs. And I was just curious as to the thought behind that. So, and I see the city attorney motioning, so I'll let him respond to that.
Section 3.60.080, subsection 4, related to window signs, has a time frame.
Oh, it does. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Very good. Great. And then my last tickler question had to do with yard sign examples. So this is this section is a significant departure from where we have been as a city, where we're actually looking to allow up to 32 square feet of private yard signs, which I think may shock some people as we come into various either election season or sensitive issues coming forward. So I don't know if there's some discussion that internally staff had as to why that size, or if that's an item of discussion that we want to make sure that we focus on when we hear this again in 2 weeks. So. So with that, that's all the specific questions I had, but I'm sure we'll have a rousing discussion with when it comes back to us. So does anybody want prepared to make a motion on this consent item?
I shall. I make a motion that we accept the consent item number 6 as presented.
Second.
Very good. So that is to conduct a first reading by title only and introduced ordinance amending Article 9, Section 3.6 of the Grove Beach Municipal Sign Code, and schedule second reading and adoption of the ordinance and adoption of a resolution approving a local coastal permit amendment at the next regularly scheduled city meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sure. Very good.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
And the second concurs. So roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Lee.
Yes. So we will look forward to seeing lots of folks at the next meeting for a public hearing on signs. So that will take us into our regular business for this evening. And because we have no public hearing, so this is item number 8, Tourism Marketing District and Visits Locale Renewal. Mr. City Manager, if you would please.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I am pleased to introduce Chuck Davison and Derek Kirk from Visit SloCal. They are here tonight to speak on behalf of the effort to renew the countywide tourism marketing district. I'll note that Grover Beach is the first community to be considering adoption of a resolution this evening. And what the resolution is to request the County Board of Supervisors officially take action to extend the so-called TMD, as the acronym is, and to allow the assessment to be placed upon Grover Beach Lodging Establishment. So there is a formal action that is required of the council. Ultimately, the County Board of Supervisors has the action regarding the TMD itself, as Mr. Davison will speak to. And on that note, I want to just thank Chuck and Derek and the whole Visit SloCal team for their tremendous work in marketing our region and marketing our community. They are champions of what we are doing across this area and are strong supporters of our work here in Grover Beach. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce Chuck Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Davidson. And before you start, I do want to just let those in the audience know that Mr. Davidson is going to be making an approximately 15-minute presentation this evening. So, and then we will open this up to the public for public comment on the item, of which we will request that you keep those comments to approximately 3 minutes. So just want to make sure that everyone is aware that we're trying to be consistent with our three-minute time frame. But Mr. Davidson is going to be giving a presentation on this item, so we wanted to offer him more time. So, Mr. Davidson, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, city staff. Again, I'm Chuck Davidson. I'm the president and CEO of Visit SloCal, and I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you this evening speaking on this important initiative. Our relationship with the city of Grover Beach goes back a long way. Mr. Mayor, you were a board member of our organization in the past, and Councilmember Shaw, it's been almost 5 years now since we first met in the original formation of the Tourism Marketing District, and you have graciously served on our advisory committee for the last several years, so we want to acknowledge and appreciate that. When we were in front of you 5 short years ago, we were really dreaming about what the success of a tourism marketing district could look like. Now, today, I stand in front of you, and we're in a position no longer to dream about that, but to truly see the success of this effort, this countywide effort, on behalf of not only our local communities, but the region in general. Tourism is the number two economic driver in the county of San Luis Obispo, as I think many of you know, and it really plays a vital role in economic health, vitality, and longevity for our communities. Tourism actually now makes up 9.7% of the countywide GDP. Compare that to 2.7% at the state level that tourism makes up in GDP. And we really consider tourism the first date of economic development and talent attraction. People don't move to a destination that they haven't first visited. And so when we think of the tourism role, we talk about this in this cycle. If you build a place where people want to visit, you'll build a place where people want to live. And if you build a place where people want to live, you'll build a place where people want to work. And if you build a place where people want to work, you'll build a place where business has to be. And if you build a place where business has to be, you'll build a place that people want to visit. And so it starts with the visit for all of our communities. It's important when we look at the tourism ecosystem that we really understand our greatest opportunities lie in the work that's being done at the funnel level above us. Each layer of the tourism ecosystem works on behalf of the layers below. And so in this funnel that you see in front of you, Brand USA is really working to drive travelers to the United States. Visit California is looking to capture those travelers both from the U.S. and internationally into the state of California. We are in turn looking to capture those individuals who are coming to the state of California into San Luis Obispo County and then into your local community here in Grover Beach and all the way down to your local lodging, retail, food and beverage attractions. So the higher up in the funnel, those individuals are doing work that we simply can't accomplish on our own, much like we are doing for your local community. In the past few years, we've made some really significant impact in growing the awareness of San Luis Obispo County, or SloCal, as we have reframed it, in our strategic efforts. You have in your agenda packet our detailed Tourism Marketing District scorecard that really outlines the last 3.5 years of our work at a very high level, but I wanted to spend just a few minutes tonight focusing on some of those highlights. Over the past 3 years, we spent $3.3 million in advertising SloCal as a destination for people to travel to. This year alone, that budget is $1.2 million. And that's spread across 7 key feeder markets. With the announcement of the new air service that we made just a week and a half ago, we'll go back to the board on Wednesday asking for another $400,000 in marketing to get those 2 markets open, and that'll take us to 9 markets, and we'll talk a little bit more about air service in a few minutes. In the media and travel trade space, we continue to expand our products and our exposure, sharing the destination with travel agents, tour companies, and the press. And in the last 3 years, we've hosted almost 500 representatives in SloCal, an average of 156 per year, or 2.3 visits every other day. So I think it's important to note specifically for Grover Beach that just over the past few months, we've hosted 3 different groups totaling over 200 attendees. And in those 200 attendees, we were featuring local restaurants like the Ribline and Spoon Trade, along with some bonfire celebrations that we did right here in Grover Beach. And so those are just some quick efforts just over the last few months where we're generating exposure for Grover Beach that wouldn't exist without SloCal. In addition to that, we've held almost 2,000 meetings over the last 3 years introducing people around the globe to the destination as we talk about meetings and appointments for our market. In addition to that, many of you know that Highway 1 was closed for an epic 22 months. We did a lot of work around that closure to make sure that those to the north and south of us were aware that there was a reroute into our community, that the community was not, in fact, shut off. And in addition to that, we relaunched Highway 1 through our relationship with Visit California just over a year ago now. And the exposure around that led to 834 million impressions for our communities. We had over 100 media in market for a three-day event, many of which were able to come and experience Grover Beach. On top of that, we've done a series of research projects over the past 3 years, from tourism impact studies to visitor volume studies to share of wallet studies that really have provided opportunity for Grover Beach to gain insight and direction into that visitor that's coming into their community. And lastly, in this case, we've supported the establishment of three new flight markets, originally with Seattle, Denver, and Dallas, totaling over 270,000 additional seats into the market with more to come. And so those, lost the slide. Those key accomplishments, along with 10 years of straight growth, have really led to substantial investments in new property construction here in the county. You may or may not be aware, but there's 2,000 hotel rooms that will be built or under construction here in the community in the next 4 years. And so those 2,000 hotel rooms, although we're very excited about the conversation that leads to, new hotel rooms lead to the ability for us to advertise and talk about new product and new destinations. With that, that's an 11.8% increase in inventory across the county just over the next 15 months. You've seen some of that inventory come along around you at a new property that opened in downtown AG just a couple months ago, the new property at the pier in Pismo Beach scheduled to open here in the next 30 days. And so as we add more inventory, again, that creates a demand issue, making sure that we have enough people into the market to be able to fill those hotel rooms. I'm going to keep moving without the slides, and we'll get to them when we see them. So that inventory forecast, oh, here we go, perfect timing. That 11.8% increase in inventory is going to lead to the forecast that you see here in front of you. Smith Travel Research, which is the leading forecaster of lodging occupancy across the United States, has us experiencing a decrease in occupancy of 3.5% in 2020 and a decrease in revenue per available room by 1.7% in 2020 as well. So, again, excited about the landscape of more inventory, but it does create a challenge in the supply and demand model.
And actually, Chuck, before you proceed, maybe go back to that slide for just a moment.
Sure.
And just for reference, what is our current occupancy standard at the moment?
Yeah, so currently our county for the last 3 years has been running right about 68.5%. And so we're going to see that dip down to about 66.8. Again, that's if this number holds true. One of the other items in the current landscape is the challenge of what that means for our economy. So we're all starting to see a slowdown in the economy. We've been experiencing it here in the county for about the last 6 months. We've had 10 straight years of growth, right, in travel and tourism. So at some point, that has to level out and probably start working itself in the other direction. We were at U.S. Travel's conference here 2 months ago, and it was the first time that we have heard three separate economists at the same conference forecast a recession in 2020. So, you know, we know that the market is going to turn. What that looks like, we don't know. I think one of the things that we are trying to stay in front of as an organization is this convergence of new inventory with a downturn in the market at the exact same time could be a perfect storm for our community, something that we can't afford. You couple in with that, should Visit SloCal's district renewal not occur, and now all of a sudden you have an increase in inventory of, you know, 2,000 rooms, drives a decrease in the market and no more funding to help make sure that we're creating enough demand, and that could literally be a tsunami that would be difficult for our communities to overcome. So one of the challenges that we face, and it is a great challenge, but as we open up new markets, they require substantial investment. All of our markets, as you can see from the slide in front of you, eight of the markets that we advertise in are in the top 25 largest markets in the United States, meaning that the markets that we're in are expensive by default. We will always be a hub and spoke model. We will never be the hub. We will always be the spoke, right? We are driving from the hub of Los Angeles, Dallas, Phoenix, San Francisco. Those are big markets sending people to us. And by default, when we have to advertise in those markets, it costs a substantial amount of money. When we started this initiative, when we were in front of you 5 years ago, we were advertising in three key markets, LA, San Francisco, and Phoenix, based on drive markets and Phoenix as a flight market. That quickly went to seven markets here over the last couple of years with the addition of the new air service. And now with our announcement 2 weeks ago, it's going to go to nine markets. And so that $1.2 million originally spread across three markets is now spread across nine markets, and it gets harder and harder to stay substantial in those communities. When we talk about air service, it's really about creating new visitors and visitors who can't get to this destination by any other way outside of a multi-day drive. And so when we started the air service campaign back in 2015, two-thirds of the air capacity was from inside the state. Again, LA and San Francisco at the time, with Phoenix being the only out-of-state market. Now today, I'm proud to stand in front of you and say that 58% of our flights into San Luis Obispo County come from outside the state. So we've completely reversed that scenario of driving business to the community that, again, otherwise wouldn't exist. Something that both the airport and the county board of supervisors will tell you would not exist without Visit SoCal's partnership, because, again, we are the ones helping fund the advertising in those markets of origin to make sure that those flights are full and those flights continue to fly. Again, as we saw 2 weeks ago with the announcement of Portland and San Diego, that's now the fifth and sixth new market that we've added, the 10th new direct flight in 33 months. So in less than 3 years, again, six new markets, 10 new flights to an airport that had not seen new air service in 10 years before we started this initiative in our partnership with the airport and the county, something that we remain very proud of. In addition to increasing that flight segment, we're really looking to continue to expand service. So you may know that about a year and a half ago, we started direct service to Denver. In October next month, that service goes to three times daily. So you've seen how fast that service has been able to grow based on the demand that we're able to create in that outbound market of origin. And I think one of the things that's really interesting about our airport, different than, say, my former home city of Las Vegas, where 80% of the travel in the airport is from those outside of the market. There's not a lot of people leaving Vegas. It's mostly people coming to Vegas. Our market is exactly 50-50. 50% people leaving here, 50% people coming in, which in a scenario of economic downturn plays perfectly for the airline because they know that we're a balanced market on both sides, and that helps us maintain the air service that we have. So in addition to that, our destination management strategy was really constructed to stay competitive over the long run while making sure that we're protecting and enhancing the resident quality of life, something that's extremely important to us as an organization. And that process has really helped develop an action plan going forward on how we proactively market our destination. Again, you know, we as an organization are not going to own many of these buckets. We'll own the ones that are tourism related. But buckets like workforce housing and industry development are critical items to not only the tourism ecosystem, but also to our local economic development communities. And this really provides a platform for tourism to have a voice in those conversations, things that we are contributing to, but necessarily haven't been at the table to help solve. When we look at our regional comparison for other destination marketing organizations, you can see on the screen in front of you the county organizations that we compete with, and you see that SoCal as a destination from a budget standpoint is at the very bottom. Not only do we, in most cases, have a larger county to market, in our case, almost 3,600 square miles of the county. But in addition to that, when you look at this based on hotel rooms, we've got a lot of rooms, again, with the smallest amount of budget. When you break this out on a per hotel comparison, we are, again, at the very bottom, and this is before the build of these additional 2,000 rooms that are coming online, something that we're going to need to be responsible for filling. I think the other thing that's interesting on this comparison is many of these destinations are also pursuing additional funding like we are. Santa Barbara currently has a petition out in front of their lodging community where they're looking to raise their assessment rate from $4 to $7.50 on the top tier. So, again, we're going to talk about some comparisons, but we're nowhere near any of those numbers. So that leads us to kind of these terms of the district moving forward and this future-focused mentality on how we continue to move the community forward in the tourism space with this renewal. And after hearing from our lodging community, our board has really had a strategic focus on what's the long-term solution to make sure that we're supporting the tourism industry, our local communities, with this investment. And so that's where we get to this increase of 5 years to 10 years to really allow us to plan for more of a long-term initiative, along with increasing our efficiencies and reducing our costs. Going through this renewal every 5 years takes a lot of time. It takes your time. It takes our time, the lodging community's time, and it also costs us significant amount of money in order to get this renewal done each 5 years. So going to a 10-year model helps resolve that. In addition to that, increasing the assessment from 1% to 1.5% is really a focus on trying to close the gap on this competitive set that we have against these other communities and really preparing Slocal as a destination for the best and worst case scenarios. So when we look at that in this focus, a lot of times the question comes up is, well, what is the threshold? And you can see here from the competitive set, again, that even with the 1.5% scenario, Visit SoCal remains close to the bottom. We are not a proponent of, hey, let's just create more tax and charge people more. That's not at all what we're saying. But you see here that the average in just this competitive set right now is 14.9. The average at the state is just a smidgen above that. We believe that even with this 0.5% assessment that there's not only opportunity, but that there remains opportunity for a community like Grover Beach that one day with this new hotel build you have coming on may say, hey, we're going to establish our own TBID, and we're going to put another 1% on top of that, which still would have you below the average in the current segment. So here you can see the breakdown of communities. Again, when you look at Grover Beach, they fall into the 13% total collection currently. Again, that number would move to 13.5% for all those communities. And a place like Morro Bay that's currently at 14% would move to 14.5%. So when you think of Grover Beach as a competitive set, and I know you just went through this exercise last year with the increase in your TOT, you can see that it remains extremely competitive. So, again, the key strategies here over the next 10 years are really focus on increasing the advertising and driving repeat visitation for longer length of stay, including into vacation rentals, which I know your community has recently continued to embrace. The sales support around making sure our hotels are full, and in the international markets, making sure that we're capturing those visitors who are traveling Highway 1 already. Continuing to increase our air service development and help advance those markets while helping tourism and the economic development community. And then in the destination management strategy, again, focusing on how we continue to improve the resident quality of life here for all of us. So as we consider those impacts, we've definitely seen a return on investment in our work as part of the initiative for the renewal of the district. The city managers and the county administrator asked us to do an ROI on our work over the last couple of years. The return on investment by a third party who did the work showed for every dollar that we spend, there's $40 returned to the community. So an extremely high ROI for the advancement of our work. Grover Beach last year contributed $35,000 to the total $4 million budget for Visit SoCal. So I would suggest that the return on investment for this community was dramatically higher than that 40-1. This is the schedule as we proceed through next steps. So we're in the petition drive process. This is our first city council meeting. We have the remainder of the city council meetings taking place between tonight and October 15th, which will be the last meeting, and then it will move into the Board of Supervisors hearing process. So that meeting schedule has us, you know, working towards the completion. The state requirement is a 50% plus $1 in revenue contribution, signing the petition in the process. Currently, to date in your community, our signatures make up 68% of the total TOT revenue in the community, so far exceeding the 50% plus $1 requirement in your community alone. Again, you know, we continue to work to make sure that we're positioning the destination in a way to win. And when we look at our competitive destinations like Santa Barbara and Napa, half of their funds come from TOT. It's general funds contributed on behalf of the community. And we know that our communities simply are not in a position to fund tourism through TOT. And so it's one of the reasons that we're really in front of you tonight. We know those TOT dollars need to go to critical items in our communities like police and fire and roads and education. And so we're asking for the ability to continue to make our industry self-sustainable through this assessment funding, really providing the tools that we need to continue to grow the industry while increasing TOT and sales tax in your local community by driving more visitation, longer length of stay, and guests who are willing to spend more to really help you continue to fund the key initiatives in your community. And so we are focused on, you know, these five initiatives of cultivating awareness, establishing our new markets, fostering international visitation, and driving more demand and advocating for our future. And that is what I have for you this evening.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. I know you did go over a little bit, but we asked a couple questions in the middle. So great presentation, good speed, and very good update. We appreciate that. Any questions to my left?
I just had one clarifying question, just so people at home, we could walk them through it. So this is not going to be a cost paid by the average resident or the average taxpayer. Who is paying this cost?
That is a great question. Thank you for asking that. So, yes, this assessment currently at 1% in your local community in front of you is to move that to 1.5%. It's 1.5% of the room rate paid by the visitor. So a visitor checks into a hotel, they pay $100 for their room. On top of that is 12% of your local TOT here in Grover Beach, and then an additional 1.5% for the Tourism Marketing District assessment. So they would pay an extra $13.50 on that $100 room rate. Again, paid directly by the visitor. There is zero impact to the community. Actually, the upside is all to the community because the work that we do on things like air service development that provides our community an opportunity to get on a plane and fly direct to a destination is paid for by the visitor, not paid for by them.
And I think you said the major hotel players in Grover Beach agree that this is a good cost. I think you said 68%.
68% of the revenue for hotels. So, again, our district includes hotel, motel, vacation rental, B&B, and RV park. We are totally inclusive in the way that we market a destination, which is why we're so happy with your recent vacation rental ordinance change. So 68% of the revenue from your community. I would also say that your largest hotel, the Holiday Inn Express, Sam Miller, the general manager there, is a board member at Visit SoCal and spends a lot of time investing in our organization and the work that we do on behalf of you and the city of Grover Beach.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions to my right?
We actually received an email letter from Holiday Inn Express expressing their
support.
Thank you. Support of this.
Yeah, Mr. Miller did submit a letter. So, Chuck, I appreciate the presentation. Had a kind of a stretch question for you with regards to obviously there's all of the opportunities for flights coming in and so forth, but then there's probably going to end up being a kind of a parking crunch at the airport. So, is your organization working to help address that? And if so, how and when?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. We, as part of our destination management strategy, which your city manager, Matt Bronson, served on the steering committee for, one of the recommendation items was to look at the airport master plan along with air service development. So I think it's interesting that coming up here in about 45 days, the airport, the new terminal will have been open for 2 years. We're already reaching a capacity issue at the new terminal, which I don't think anybody thought when they originally decided to build it. There is a master plan that gets to a second wing of that terminal along with the parking issue. And so although we don't have any control over how the county the county manages that. We are definitely pushing in to help figure out how we best solve that issue. I know that they have just recently gone through a parking analysis, and they're looking at multiple options from, you know, off-site parking and shuttle, which is short-term and obviously not completely ideal, to a long-term strategy that could include a parking garage. And so that air service development, along with the airport master plan, are going to be important criteria as we consider the next decade.
Very good. Yeah, thank you for that. And then also in one of your slides, and it's not coming up on my screen, but you didn't reference it in your presentation. I just wanted to ask a question for you. In one of your slides, you'd indicated a very distinct need for approximately $15,000, a space of $15,000 for a convention center of some sort. And I know the Grover Beach Lodge and Convention Center has had several delays, but there is still a need for that. And so while it's not on the front burner, I would like to encourage the Visit SoCal and the surrounding communities to really continue to focus on the need for that convention center, and hopefully it does surface in Grover Beach early of a time frame as possible. So
yeah, we could not agree more. When we originally did the feasibility study for that back in April of 2017, it showed a need for a ballroom of up to 20,000 square feet that would seat 1,500 people at a dinner. You may or may not know the largest ballroom that we have in the county is the Embassy Suites, comfortably seats 410 for dinner. So we are turning down 500 person groups on a very consistently weekly basis. That development of that center has now been looked at, currently being looked at by three municipalities. Obviously, Grover Beach has been a leader in that conversation for a long time. The most recent Grover Beach Lodge scenario showed that they were decreasing that, you know, event space down to a few thousand square feet. So we continue to believe, especially with the advancement of this 2,000 rooms being built, that the only way we're going to stay in front of demand is to create a midweek segment. And the only way you create a midweek segment is to have business travel. And we're going to have our best opportunity for business travel through meeting and conference, which we need more space for.
Great. Very good. Thank you for that. Is there any other questions?
No, just thank you for all the work that you've done. I personally have been impacted by all the additional flights to be able to see family that live around the country. So thank you.
That makes us smile.
Very good. Great. Very good. So we'll go ahead and open this to the public and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak on this item. I do have one speaker slip. That is Jocelyn Brennan.
Mayor Lee, council members, the South County Chambers of Commerce could not support this item more. Several things that you touched on in your questions are really important to our local businesses. Obviously, the tourism revenue, trailing spouse issues to have the flights that we have, and also the potential of a T-bid eventually for Grover Beach. So we work really closely with Visit SoCal, and we're really proud to be partners with them on the work that they do for South County. Those are my thoughts as the CEO of the South County Chambers, and I'm just going to read a small excerpt from a letter from a coalition of stakeholders, several chambers, the EVC, the SLO Regional Airport, and of course, South County Chambers. I won't read the whole thing. You should have a copy of it, but I'll just read the beginning of it. Dear Mayor Lee and Grover Beach Council members, on behalf of the Central Coast Region's business community, our coalition strongly urges your support for the renewal of the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Marketing District managed by Visit SoCal. In less than 5 years since the TMD was unanimously approved by the seven cities and SoCal County, Visit SoCal has added tremendous value to our region and each of our unique communities by accomplishing what none of our individual communities could accomplish alone. The regional partnership model is critical to the future success and competitiveness of our region, not only for tourism, but for the broad economic health and vibrancy of our region and quality of life of all of our residents. So we strongly urge your support of the renewal of the district, and we look forward to working together with Visit SoCal.
Very good. Thank you for those comments, and I always appreciate people that come up and read from their phone rather than reading from papers. It's becoming a paperless society. So, however, with that, I will go ahead and open it up to the public, see if there's any other members that want to come forward and speak on this item. Anyone coming forward? Seeing no one come forward, so we will go ahead and close that and bring it back to the council for comments or motions.
I'll make a comment and a motion. I've had the benefit of being in many of the meetings back when we had a different name, and I got to spend a year before the Tourism Marketing District when I think the total money was pot was $300,000, and exactly right, the RVs were trying to go their way, and the hotels were trying to advertise this way, and Paso wanted their name, and Pismo wanted their name, and we weren't getting anywhere. So I just... how much has changed in these 5 years? I couldn't be more proud, even with my little association with it. So with that, I will make a motion that we adopt a resolution recommending that the County Board of Supervisors approve the renewal of the Countywide Tourism Marketing District and the related contract with Visit SloCal for 10 years with an assessment of 1.5% on all lodging establishments in the city.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
I will say one thing that I have seen the director of SloCal in his free time on our beach in Grover Beach enjoying a bonfire. That is his go-to recreational thing to do.
And I concur with that and the fact that I've met him down there and had conversations, probably much to the chagrin of his wife and family members. So, but I do appreciate the availability for that. So, and my only comment before we do take a roll call is when I was on Visit SloCal, or the appropriate name of precursor, there was an event called Savor the Central Coast, and I know it was a way to get people to come to this community and to enjoy this. Now the format is that Savor the Central Coast goes out to other jurisdictions and introduces them to San Luis Obispo in their homes and then gives them an opportunity to come here. So I think it's a very good marketing effort, and I appreciate all the work that's been done on that, and looking forward to continuing to move forward. So with that, roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Lance.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols is absent. Mayor Lee.
And I'll be a yes as well, so that motion does carry, and we look forward to six other cities and the county moving forward on this item. So thank you both for being here and supporting this. And everybody okay to continue?
Can I have a 5 minute?
You can have an 8 minute break. How about if we will adjourn until 7:45?
Thank you very much.
We'll recess until 7:45. Very good. We will come back from our break and proceed to the next item, which is our fiscal year 2018-19 general fund year-end financial review. Mr. Bronson, are you going to kick this off?
Yes, just very briefly. Michelle. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Being transparent with our finances is a key responsibility that we have as a city. We do quarterly reports, mid-year reports, end-of-year reports, and so tonight is an example of what we'll be sharing with you. This is the preliminary year-end financial review of the general fund from last fiscal year to show the council and the community how their dollars were generated, how they were spent, and the financial position that we are in currently. So with that, I'll turn it over to our Administrative Services Director, Deanne Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm here to present to you the 2018-19 general fund year-end financial review for the period ending June 30th, 2019. Right. So, thank you. The general fund is the city's primary fund, where taxes, charges for services, and other general revenues. It's skipping around, I don't know what it's doing. It's doing its own thing. So the general fund is the city's primary fund where taxes, charges for services, and other general revenues are collected and accounted for. Basic public services are funded from these revenues and include public safety, public works, community development, parks and recreation, and general city administration. Normally, we include water and wastewater in our year-end review. Although due to a new utility billing system that was implemented around the mid-year, these funds will be included in the year-end information as part of the annual audit. This table shows the original budget in column 2. If you look at that blue line down below where it says annual surplus and deficit, you'll see that originally we had anticipated a general fund deficit of a little over $621,000. Moving over to that last column, the actual amounts, they're unaudited, are showing a much different picture with the surplus of close to $700,000 and general fund reserves of $3.4 million or 31% of operating costs. The council's adopted general fund reserve policy for the city is established as a minimum of 15% of operating expenditures with the council goal of 20% of operating expenditures. As of June 30th, the actual ending reserves of $3.4 million are $1.7 million higher than the policy minimum 15% and $1.2 million over the 20% goal. It's recommended at this time that the council use caution in spending these reserves and allow staff to come back and give a financial update in the quarter one around November and the mid-year in February of 2020 so that we know that we have a good picture of where we stand given the possibility of an economic downturn or any changes that may occur. So looking at the city's top five general fund revenue, they comprise of about 75% of the total revenue for fiscal year 2018-19. The total revenues are projected to end the year at $12.1 million compared to $10.9 million budgeted. The variance is mainly due to a few items. The cannabis tax, which is coming in at over $250,000 more than we had anticipated, and sales tax, which is coming in over $400,000 more than we had budgeted. That, surprisingly, is due to the cannabis tax, which we didn't realize at the time when we budgeted for the new cannabis industry, that the sales tax would also be impacted, and it's a extra benefit to the new cannabis industry. In addition, TOT, with the approved 2% rate increase last year, around half year, we are seeing that we have an additional over 45,000 than we had expected. And then I want to also note that in that last column, all other revenue and transfers, the 447,000 is mainly for from one-time proceeds. We had capital leases that included dispatch system, patrol vehicles and other equipment that weren't budgeted for, but this revenue is offset by the purchase of those vehicles. So the revenue and the expense, bottom line, is general fund neutral because we record both the revenue and the expenditures of those capital assets. This table compares general fund revenues for fiscal year 2017-18 compared to the unaudited fiscal year 2018-19 numbers. And I put them in order of the largest increase down to the lowest. So you will see cannabis tax at the top there. It's new this year in 2017-18. We only collected $16,000. So this is its first full year of activity. So we were seeing a big increase there of $937,000. And followed by that is sales tax. Again, as we talked, we're seeing an increase of $450,000, and that is also due to that cannabis new industry. The proceeds of the loans that were for the dispatch system and the patrol vehicles and equipment, that's one-time revenue of $335,000 over the prior year. And then property tax is increased $280,000. Followed by construction permits are up by $75,000. TOT is up due to that rate increase. We also changed our methodology for our business tax certificates. We went to a square footage methodology, so that's up by $60,000. Cannabis, a live scan. We did do live scan in 17-18, but that's also increased by almost $50,000. So in total, revenues for 2018-19 are $12.1 million compared to $9.7 million. It's a $2.4 million increase over the prior year, or a 25% increase. General fund expenditures. Looking at general fund expenditures by department, most departments were under budget due to savings in various operational expenditures or salaries and benefits. Public Works was a little over budget, mainly due to more staff time being charged to the general fund and less to the enterprise funds, along with the unanticipated repair to the police station and the purchase of a backhoe that was actually budgeted in 2017-18 but not received and recorded until 2018-19, and the budget wasn't carried over. So that's why you see that difference. The police budget, they were over budget, and it was mainly due to those capital leases that we talked about that weren't budgeted for, so we had to record the purchase of those vehicles and dispatch system and equipment, but that was offset by salary savings from vacant positions. So my next slide will kind of show that a little bit clearer, because we're going to look at the expenditures by type. So here we see the salaries and benefits, which clearly are under budget by $362,000, and that's mainly due to savings from vacant positions in the police department. The minor capital, again, I feel like a broken record, but that is due to the capital leases that we talked about for the purchase of the dispatch system and the vehicles and the equipment. So bottom line, we were pretty close to what we had budgeted. We were about 99%. Had we not had the vehicle or the capital leases that we talked, we would have been under budget even more than that. So I think we were doing very well in that area. To sum it up, overall, the city's general fund is in a solid financial position. We have strong reserves. We recommend caution in using those reserves until mid-year review. Again, we want to keep in mind that we could have a potential recession coming in the next couple of years, so we want to make sure we keep our reserves strong. We suggest limiting it to one-time uses. Our ongoing service needs continue to exist, particularly in public safety. Our revenue is solid, overall revenue growth, and the new cannabis industry is still evolving, so we want to recognize we are being cautious in our optimism, and we will continue to monitor revenue through quarterly reporting, economic forecasts, and trend analysis. Expenditures overall, our expenses are lower than budgeted for most departments, and we will continue to carefully monitor and stay within budget through monthly review and quarterly updates to council. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. So any questions to my right?
Might be a question for the city manager, but I'll ask it. As far as obviously being at 31% with our reserves, also considering that you recommend taking caution with the potential recession or economic downturn, whatever you want to call it, I mean, obviously we have a baseline of 15%, 20% being our recommended, 31% being more than double what our baseline is. So, I mean, I think we do need to have a discussion about what kind of one-time things can we do with this money, being cautious, does that, I mean, I'm obviously new to this kind of format. Is the mid-year review a time for us to discuss that, or what's a good time to have that conversation?
Actually, perhaps that is a legitimate question to have of the city manager with regards to some discussions that he and I have been having on that very subject. And so perhaps, city manager, if you would enlighten us as to when our economic development discussion is intended to be and perhaps what might be included in that discussion.
Sure, I'd be glad to put this in context. So again, overall, the main message point is that we are in a very strong financial position. The revenues that have been generated over the last year in particular have enabled us to be in a place where we have strong reserves that are above and beyond the council's policy goal and what is, I believe, a prudent level to reserve for that rainy day, for that emergency, for that one-time use that is unexpected, for a downturn that we know will happen at some point in the next 1, 2, 3 years. We want to make sure we have adequate reserves for that purpose. 31% gives the council some flexibility above and beyond that 20% goal that I believe is a prudent level of reserves that we should be looking at. So we're giving this information to you to help seed the ground for your future conversations that you'll have over the next few months. We'll be talking about economic development coming up on October 7th, talking about the $220,000 that we know we have in the one-time SB 1090 dollars for economic development purposes above and beyond this. That's not included in any of these numbers that we've shown you this evening. So those funds are available. You could choose to look at some other funds from the reserves to be able to help fund key economic development items going forward. You're also going to be talking more about water programs and infrastructure needs coming forward. So there are a number of possibilities that you'll be discussing from a policy standpoint. We'll then come back to you in November to indicate how the first quarter of this fiscal year is going and how our initial trends are projecting, and then come back in February with that mid-year review. At that point, we'll have a pretty good sense of how we think this fiscal year will turn out, particularly with this new revenue source that didn't exist a year ago. It's a very new source that is still evolving. The trends are positive, but it's still a very new source that we're being very cautious around. So all this to say is that I think this information tonight is building towards your conversations over the next few weeks and months about potential policy initiatives to consider for targeted use of these reserves, and then ultimately the mid-year review coming up in February is when things can come together and we could recommend some possibilities for the council to consider above and beyond that reserve goal of 20% that gives us a good cushion.
Okay, to summarize, we'll be discussing opportunities to potentially use the extra reserves above and beyond our 20% in the form of water projects, economic projects. However, the mid-year review will be when we're going to be making potentially some more actionable actions.
I would just add to that to say that is a potentially a natural time for that to take place. Okay. The council has direction at any time to consider looking at our reserves or financial resources to apply towards council initiatives. That can happen at any time. This is the beginning of helping to inform the council about what our financial position looks like. You'll have more information coming up in November, and then you'll have more information coming up in February, but the council could elect to use some of these funds towards targeted initiatives anytime over the next couple of months.
Thank you.
And if you may recall, there was some of that discussion during when we were looking at the budget for this fiscal year. One of the discussion items was a potential lump sum payment for PERS,
correct,
or for other capital projects. And so, but yes, I think you're correct in the fact that the mid-year cycle is probably the appropriate time to have that actionable discussion. Unless there's something that occurs between now and then that dictates an earlier discussion. So, any other questions?
I don't think so. No. Thank you.
Great. Very good. And any questions to my left?
No questions. Thank you for the report.
No questions at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you for that report tonight. I did just have one question, and it has to do with the reference to salary savings, specifically in our police department. And I just want to either have the chief or the city manager kind of address the fact that we are anticipating that we are still doing active searching, and so we do anticipate having those positions filled as efficiently and quickly as possible.
Yes, currently we are in a recruitment period. We have two vacancies as it stands right now, and we are going to be talking to a few candidates within the next couple of weeks. So hopefully that proves promising, and then we have some future plans as well to meet our 2018 guidelines and stuff. So we're preparing for years to come.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Certainly.
Do you categorize your vacancies by lateral transfers and also new recruits?
Right now the vacancies are we'll hire a good quality, qualified candidate, whether it be a lateral or an academy recruit to go to the academy in January.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Any other questions of the chief? Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Very good. So I don't have any other questions, but I will open this up to the public, see if there's any member of the public that wants to speak on this item.
It's a great budget,
okay.
You know, to come in that, you know, that budget and be that close, I think.
Great. So thank you, Deborah, for those comments. So she did say it was a good budget, a great budget, and it, getting the estimates that close to actuals are a testament to our city staff, and I do appreciate that comment. And then also just the fact that the hard work of city staff and the diligence with which we expend funds, and we do it appropriately for the services that the city provides while still making sure that our revenues are diversified beyond just a single source, I think, is a testament to what we've done as a council, what staff does with the direction we provide and implements that policy, and then the support that we get from the community on a daily and annual basis to make sure that we keep that diversification. So with that, I'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to any discussion. This is a receive and file, so there's no action this evening. But
I just had a quick comment. I did like in the report that you know, Public Works did go a little over budget, but it is because they are trying to really conserve those K-14 funds, which I appreciate because I know they'll get us to a certain level on the streets, but they were never intended to get us the whole way there. So as careful as they can be with those funds, I think is a really good thing.
I'll just reiterate, they were expected to get us all the way through our residential streets.
All through our residential?
Yes.
Well, all the way through our residential to a certain PCI, but I would like to see us at a higher PCI someday. So you never know.
I completely agree with that, and I think that is going to be one of our long-term discussion as to what we do with our maintenance of our streets mm-hmm. after we finish mm-hmm. the Measure K-14 projects with that. So, mm-hmm. so.
But I really appreciated the report in general. I remember coming here in 2014 on the heels of the recession that I think we felt in Grover Beach longer than most, and I never dreamed I'd see a report like this. So I appreciate everybody's work.
Very good. City Manager, did you have anything to add?
Just a quick add that I think the public works funding in particular reflects not only the street work that's being done, but also the continued maintenance of our city facilities and infrastructure. We had to devote more time towards general fund purposes, and we have to do more and more of that given our aging facilities. So that, I think, is a topic for further discussion as we look at how best to maintain what we have, making sure that the people's facilities are well kept after, well maintained, and in good shape.
Thank you for those comments. Any other discussion? If not, we will consider that received and filed, and thank you.
Thank you. So,
and that will take us to our next item, which is I'm seeing it correctly, positions on resolutions to be considered at the League of California Cities annual conference. So, City Manager, did you want to have a brief discussion or brief introduction of this item?
Yes, sir. I'll keep this very, very brief. Coming up in October is the annual League of California Cities conference, and typically there are resolutions that are put forth by one or more cities that will be up for an action by the League of Cities General Assembly. So we have a representative and Mayor Pro Tem Shaw who will be there at the General Assembly on Friday, afternoon. So there have been two resolutions that have been submitted for the General Assembly and for member agencies to consider. And the action before the council is to consider whether the council wants to take an official city position on one or both of these resolutions. It is entirely up to the council and your policy direction to consider doing so. Just briefly to summarize, the first resolution would call upon the California Public Utilities Commission to amend the so-called Rule 20A program for undergrounding utility lines to also include fire safety as one of the criteria that would be eligible. Currently, that is not an eligible criteria for this program. It really focuses more on aesthetics of undergrounding utilities, not having power lines everywhere. But this would explicitly have fire safety as one of those eligible criteria and allow local agencies to work with PG&E and other utility providers to fund those programs accordingly. So there's a lot of information in your staff report and attachments about why that could be a good possibility. This item is consistent with some of the league policies regarding public safety, regarding wildfire prevention. But again, it's a matter of does the council feel it compelling enough to take a formal city position in support or opposition or wish to remain neutral on this resolution. The second resolution pertains to the transnational pollution that is occurring in the California-Mexico, U.S.-Mexico border watershed. A couple of rivers, the New River in Imperial County and the Tijuana River in San Diego County, are significant sources of urban water pollution that spills out into the ocean. There are impacts to the beaches and marine life both countries. And the resolution calls upon the federal and state governments to address these impacts more forcefully and formally than perhaps the governments have done so to this date. There's a number of materials coming forward that are in support of this resolution from San Diego County in particular. And again, this is a same question for the council. It is an action resolution that is consistent with many league policies and goals related to water quality. It's a matter of does the council feel it is compelling enough to have a position on this resolution to then vote upon accordingly at the League of Cities Assembly coming up next month. So with that, I'd be glad to take any questions or comments from the council.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Any questions to my left?
I have one. It's probably just an unfair question, but people do ask us about undergrounding power lines a lot. Could you just give the public an idea, you know, how much does it cost to even underground one block of power lines or just one area?
I might have to defer to our public works director, who is in nearby proximity to speak more definitively to that point. I would say that the city does have roughly, I believe, $900,000 or around $1 million allocated to it from PG&E. This doesn't get us very far. I believe the Ramona Park undergrounding, just as a point of reference, is roughly a $2 million undergrounding project,
okay,
just to span the length of one side of a city park. And so the cost per block, per mile, is very significant.
Okay. I wanted that to be out there because I do hear that from people a lot. Why don't you just underground? And so I just want people to know I would like to, too, but it costs a lot. So
it does.
Yeah. In addition to the cost, it also takes PG&E an inordinately long amount of time to move forward with the U20A projects or the Rule 20A projects. Mm-hmm. So time and money, that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. Any other questions to my left?
One. I couldn't see in here the information that was provided here. I don't know if anyone knows. Would this impact any of the funds that are already allocated to our undergrounding? Does anyone know?
My sense is no, because this is really tailored towards wildfire prevention, wildfire mm-hmm. risk. And as the fire chief mentioned earlier this evening, there really isn't a significant wildfire risk itself to Grover Beach because of our geography. So this wouldn't impact the funds already allocated to us. it would just unlock potential funding for areas that are in the wildfire risk zone.
Okay. Thank you.
Any questions to my right?
I have no questions.
Very good. So I don't have any questions either. So I did have an opportunity to speak with Dave Molnix before the meeting, and both of these resolutions are going to be referenced or referred to the appropriate committees. We don't have a representation on the Environmental Quality Policy Committee, but we do have myself as the Transportation, Communications, and Public Works Policy Committee. So I anticipate that that'll be the first one on the Rule 20A will come before that committee prior to the General Assembly. So if there's any questions, I can ask those questions during that committee, and depending upon how that's answered, could determine how you reference that I should vote. So from that perspective, but I don't see any public speaker comments on or slips on this, but we'll invite members of the public. No one coming forward. We'll go ahead and close that to the public and see what the direction of the council would like to be.
One thing I did find interesting in the report, and I just wanted to highlight, was that they said that some cities actually sell their PG&E credits for a reduced price. So I thought that was kind of interesting for someday. But
actually, I think historically Grover has sold some of our credits. So because we didn't have enough in order to make a full project. And so, but that may be something in the future for us to consider, is to purchase credits, available credits, if we do have a project that's close to being fully funded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just found that interesting. I would say, well, in theory, I support both of these. But, of course, if you all would like to remain neutral, then I don't really feel the need to stay as late at the conference and vote. So it's hard for me to really say what to do.
She's conflicted.
I'm conflicted. I'm also part of the General Resolutions Committee, so after you approve this at your committee, then it comes to my committee, then it goes to my committee. It's going to be a fun week. Everyone's jealous. Fun conference. But, I mean, I do, in theory, think both are important, but mm-hmm. I don't know that they'll directly impact Grover Beach, but it doesn't mean they're not important.
Yeah. And Mr. Molnix did say he didn't anticipate that either of these would be controversial to the point of having a significant debate either way. So if we choose to stay neutral or if we choose to support, we will be probably going. It's expected that these will both be approved in some fashion, unless something happens between now and then. As Mr. Molnix was saying, the only real thing that probably would make the second resolution controversial is if someone tried to tie immigration policy to it, which no one is even remotely discussing at this point.
Right.
So they're trying to deal with the pollution components of it,
right,
and keeping it out of the immigration discussion. So
let's hope so.
Coming from an immigration attorney, that is probably a good idea.
Yes, exactly. So.
Personally, I think they're both sound beneficial to the state at large. I'm kind of new to this format and supporting things like this, so for me personally, it seems a bit unnatural for us to support something that doesn't necessarily have a direct impact on our citizens or on our city. I would probably, in this capacity as council member, lean towards remaining neutral, but that would just be my initial kind of thought process.
Yeah, I don't remember what we've done in the past. Like, if something's not directly, does anyone remember? I don't.
I really don't. And really, that was pretty much my thought as well. I mean, I do think they're very important, but they really don't affect our citizens or why I'm sitting here. So personally, I would think that I would want to remain neutral. It just really isn't something that is of just something that I don't, I mean, it's not something that is, not that it's not important to our state, but it just isn't something that is,
well, I don't even know how to say it, because it is of interest to everybody, but
local level, maybe.
Yeah. And I think perhaps that's the discussion is on a local level. Obviously, neither of these are going to have a direct immediate impact upon Grover Beach, but it would show a symbolic support of initiatives throughout the state. So we can stay neutral, or we can provide support. Neither of these are intended to be controversial. So I don't think our neutral or support position is going to change the outcome in either direction. So,
I don't mind if we do decide to support. If we do want to tie it to maybe local priorities, just in thinking, we do have the environment as one of our goals, and certainly, when Santa Barbara had fires all around it, and a lot of places had fires, it did come up and affect our air quality. So in that way, I think maybe these are both tied to what happens here. So, and I don't mind staying to vote yes. I mean, it's a good lunch. I'm going to stay either way. So.
And if you do leave, then I believe Councilmember Bright is our alternate, so she'll need to stay.
Then Karen needs to vote. Oh, that's right.
That's right.
So either way, we both stay. But anyway, really, it had nothing to do with that. It was just kind of my thought that, really, just because it wasn't more of a local issue. But as I said, it certainly is important. Both of them are important. So I'm good either way. Okay. Truly.
I think from a regional perspective, I think it would be, as Mayor Pro Tem Shaw mentioned, the Rule 20A one does have the potential to be beneficial to our area a little bit more than the Tijuana resolution. However, that does deal with the start of a significant potential recycling effort throughout the state, and we've been very supportive of those initiatives as well. So.
It's still our ocean.
It is still our ocean, and if we start to clean up that area, then hopefully that momentum continues throughout the state. And if we don't do that, then perhaps it gets that creates momentum in a different fashion. So I think I'd be supportive if the council was so amenable to supporting both of these as written. But if anything new comes up in the course of the league conference itself, then we could easily change to a neutral position. But
okay, I'm good with that.
Yep, sounds good.
All right.
We have consensus.
Yep.
Yes.
Cool. Do we need a motion on that, or is that consensus direction adequate?
I think the consensus direction is adequate, and that'll provide the direction to your voting delegate accordingly.
Very good.
Okay.
Good. Great. So that concludes our regular business items for this evening. So we do have another public communication opportunity for folks in the audience. If any member wants to come forward and speak under public communications, seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back to council committee reports. So we'll start to my right with Councilmember Lance.
Sure. I had a Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting last week or the week before. I presented on what we're doing from a water perspective with adopting our new water master plan and some of the programs that we've been discussing. So that was an opportunity for us to tell the rest of the county what Grover Beach is doing from a water perspective. There was an interesting presentation from an individual from Santa Barbara County regarding a program they have that they facilitate through their local community college called the Green Gardener Program or something along that nature, where they actually reach out to the community and have certificate programs for landscape professionals to learn how to garden in a way that is sustainable and better for water usage and water recycling and drought tolerant and all those things that come with preserving water. And they're looking at maybe doing it at Allen Hancock, which obviously is not in our county but is close to us. And I just thought it was a kind of a cool program, not necessarily anything we would do, but I like to see that these programs are happening along and trying to educate everybody in water resource usage.
Very good. Thank you for that report. So any Councilmember Bright, any council committee reports?
I had no council committee reports. However, speaking of council committees, I did have the Zone 3 agenda item was forwarded to me by Councilmember Lance again. So for some reason, so I'm thinking maybe I will email our liaison tomorrow and see what the deal is, why they're sending those agendas to Councilmember Lance rather than to me.
And Councilmember Lance, you are our alternate, correct?
Correct. So, supposedly.
Yeah, so primary would be Councilmember Bright. So, mm-hmm. City Manager, maybe you could follow up as well so we kind of contact the county in two different fashions.
We will, and we have done so previously, and they confirmed that Councilmember Bright is the liaison to the committee. So, we'll
then I will go to the meeting this week.
Yeah, and we'll make sure that your email address is duly noted with them.
Okay. Thank you.
Good.
I just received it this evening, so.
And I did not.
Okay. Right. Actually, and I did as well, so I'm not sure. Okay, so we'll make sure that the appropriate person does get it. Does any other council committee reports?
No, not for me.
I didn't have any.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
No, I didn't have any.
Okay, very good. Then I just had one, which was the Integrated Waste Management Authority, where we did have a first reading for an ordinance regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene food containers and products. And so the county is moving forward with an ordinance to prohibit mostly on food containers and polystyrene. Also, marine buoys was an interesting point of discussion in the fact that those are, as they start to disintegrate in the water, they do get into the marine surrounding marine environment as well. So one of the items, this ordinance actually is closer to the City of San Luis Obispo ordinance. So there may be some items that are more restrictive from the county ordinance than from our city ordinance. But one of the things that it does do is it makes the Integrated Waste Management Authority the first line of defense, shall we say, if there are violations or concerns over product being on shelves, where they would do the outreach, the IWMA staff would do the enforcement of that, not levying of fines and so forth, but trying to do education. And then if it did get to someone who was not following the county ordinance, then they would reach out to the city to do the enforcement under our ordinance as well. So there is a possibility that we may need to bring back a cleanup ordinance if we wanted to match our ordinance to the now county one that's coming forward for a second reading. So just an FYI there, that might be something that we want to agendize in the future if there's no dissension of that. Any concerns about potentially bringing that back for a second reading or a second look at that ordinance after the IWMA adopts it?
Probably should.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's probably a long-winded way of asking for us to bring back an item, Mr. City Manager, once the Integrated Waste Management Authority adoption does take place, which would be as early as October with a six-month grace period built in as well. And with that, I have to go back to a different document now. Any League of California Cities?
Just that we have our next meeting September 27th in Moore Park. I'm going, I don't know how everyone jump at once, but if anyone wants to carpool, I'm going.
I do plan to join you in that carpool if a spot is available.
Yes, it's just you and me.
Okay.
I'll be in Loretta.
Yes, you'll be out of town.
Can't be here. Can't go.
So, all right.
Very good.
So we'll carpools to be determined, but I'm going. So.
Okay. Nice. Good. We will talk. We'll talk offline about that. But look forward to your last meeting as president.
So do I.
very good. So any council communications?
So this might be. I know there's been some discussion just internally about potentially having
not an event, that's not the right word, a forum to kind of discuss the city of Garber Beach and what we do and how we operate. And with the amount, and again, I'm fairly new to this, so I don't know whether the amount of feedback I'm getting around certain things is the normal amount of feedback or whether there's been an uptick, I'm not sure. However, I think, you know, before I became a council member, I really had no clue how the city operates, where, you know, the city stands as far as certain issues, when they get involved, when they don't, what kind of that line is as far as being a citizen of the city, and what services are kind of provided in that way. So I was thinking it might be a great opportunity to not only discuss, you know, how we're set up and what our different roles are, but, you know, there's been a lot of community communication about, you know, certain neighbor issues and these types of things. And, you know, when does the city get involved in that? Or litigation, you know, what does that look like? Where is our city at with litigation, or where has it been? And for transparency purposes, how much money are we spending on that stuff, and other things? And I don't know, just an opportunity to be a little bit more transparent to our community. Obviously, there's going to be some things just in operations that we do from day to day, but I just, it's not necessarily specific community communication that I wanted to bring up. I just think as a whole, it might be a good opportunity to kind of cross those discussions and maybe mold them, infuse them into something like that.
I think that's a very good opportunity to have a discussion, because as we've had ongoing community engagement discussions, whether it be our potlucks in the park or some other events that have come forward, there does seem to be a desire, I think, on the community's part to reach out and really learn what we do, or to jump to conclusions to what they think we do. So I think it would be a very good idea to do kind of a Grover Beach 101. Actually something the city manager and I have talked about was actually going to bring forward. So thank you for kicking off.
Sorry
the conversation.
If I jumped the gun.
Not at all.
I thought that combined with kind of a lot of the community feedback that we've, I think, all been getting on some issues might be a good time to fuse them together.
No jumping the gun there. So I think if there is a desire to do that, I think we do have an opportunity in October to potentially have a date certain to where we could have that discussion if the council wants to move forward with that. And let's have that consensus first if we do want to have that possibility of an outreach program like that.
Yes.
I mean, I will just echo those comments. I think you all are putting it very nicely and professionally. I'll just say, you know, I read the things you all post about us on the internet. Many are just not true. They're false. But can any one of us spend all day arguing with people on the internet? No. And I think 99% of taxpayers do not want our staff wasting their money responding to lies on the internet. So I would love for people to just come and ask things face-to-face, and not feel that they have to blog about us and write about us and how horrible things are. But let's just have a dialogue, and people should ask their questions and have them answered and just learn about what we can do and what we can't do.
And I agree, and I think there's also an opportunity, as we've seen, we do still have two vacancies on our Parks, Rec, and Beautification Commission, and we do have, I think, a vacancy or two probably on our Citizens Oversight Committee for Finances, realizing we've made that a little bit more of a larger committee. I know one of our members there did go to our Planning Commission, so we've always got an opportunity for good people who love the city and want to be a part of the city to participate. But they may not know what it actually entails. And so I think this is an opportunity. So I don't know, City Manager, did you have some possible dates and times? And maybe we kind of provide either some continued dialogue or direction as to what we'd like to see as part of that.
I think with the council's concurrence, this could be a unique opportunity for us to better tell our story, who we are, how we're structured, kinds of issues we're facing, and then be able to hear from the community in a bit of a town hall format. So one thought for the council could be that right now we don't have anything agendized for the October 21st meeting coming up next month. So one thought could be that we would take that meeting date, and coincidentally, I'm actually also out of town that week at a conference. We could look at scheduling a date for October 28th, the Monday after, which would be an off week in between council meeting dates, and have a so-called Grover 101 type of session during that week. I might suggest that we have it off-site from the council chamber to give it a different tone, different air than in our chamber, so over at Ramona Center as a possibility. So that's one possibility to put out for the council as a separate date aside from the meeting date, meeting chamber, and have a different type of format.
Any thoughts?
So you're saying October 28th?
As one possibility, correct.
I'm free.
Well, I will be in Chicago, but I don't want that to hinder this because I think it's really important. So I don't know.
So let's see, I'm available either the 21st or the 28th. So the 28th would work. So Councilmember Bright.
I keep my Mondays open, so.
Very good. So, City Manager, I think you just said you weren't available, or you wouldn't be in town on the 21st, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Gotcha. So the action or the direction tonight would be potentially to cancel the meeting of the 21st, unless we've already done that, and then to provide this Grover Beach 101 forum on the 28th, realizing we'll be down a council member.
Yeah, we have to ask Barbara, too.
True. Okay.
Yeah, and if we do, whenever we go forward with it, I think it's important that people get to ask questions. Maybe some of the disruption we saw tonight makes me a little scared. I'm also a human being. I don't want to fear for my safety, to be honest, with the way some people were acting tonight. But I do think it's important for people to be able to ask questions. I think people get to ask a lot of really good questions at the mayor's breakfast, and I think back when we were campaigning, that's the last time we really heard people's questions. So maybe if there could be a format like we did with the chamber where people submit questions in writing, and then we kind of roll through those questions. And maybe people can even submit on the internet, and we roll through questions.
And also we could look at how the room is set up, how it's structured. There could be opportunity for small groups to sit together. There could be opportunity for small groups to have some discussion in addition to questions posed to city officials. So there are some different things we could look at to make sure the evening was as productive and well-structured as possible.
Agreed. And I do want to kind of make sure that we structure this in a way to where it's not an overwhelming burden for staff to prepare for this, because obviously we do have priorities that we've established as a council. Community engagement is obviously a high priority overall. It wasn't one of our specific five specific goals, but as we can see with the discourse and with the conversations that we've been having either online or in the chamber, that having a educated and updated and understanding elective or populace of what the city does and what the city can do and what the city is supposed to do and what we've provided as policy direction, I think is going to be very useful to the community as a whole. So any further discussion or any, are we in agreement that we'll continue to have staff move forward with kind of structuring that with either online questions, in-person questions, perhaps some information from each of the departments as to what their work programs are, again, not establishing anything beyond what's already in place, but so the community can actually see what community development does. I think there was a report that showed they had X number of building applications. They've got X number of permits and that come forward, and planning and building has X number of encroachment permits and so forth. So general information that is probably on our website somewhere, but people haven't had the opportunity.
Bless you.
To actually go visit that and see it. And so hopefully they'll come visit us that evening. So
I'm still looking at a date. Do we? So we don't know what date, either the 21st or 28th,
well, I think
possibly?
We've got a majority of the 28th, so we
I
do
think
have
it would be prudent to do it when the city manager is available.
Yeah, and agreed. So that would be more the 28th than 21st.
Okay.
I don't know if the city manager has had discussions with Councilmember Nichols to see check her availability on the 28th.
I have not had the opportunity to do so yet, and also I need to talk further with my staff regarding the presentation materials. One thought is we could take the 21st off calendar and seek to look at a date that could work for the council as a whole, as well as our staff, and not lock into the 28th right here and there, but try to find a date around that time period that could work for everybody involved.
Because I think historically, November has sometimes been lighter in our agendas anyway, so maybe if we did also have a special meeting, yeah, wouldn't be the worst thing.
Mm-hmm. So perhaps we can kind of take a consensus if we go away from the Monday, the last Monday in October for that potential meeting, what other conflicts do people have? So when do you return?
I am away Friday the 25th through Sunday the 3rd. So.
Okay. So that week
Halloween
is,
week. Yeah.
Halloween week is out for you. Any other conflicts for you two?
I mean, no big trips, but just life. So you'll have to
just life
find
general
a date.
So, I don't know. It's hard. Hard to say.
Well, perhaps a solution there is why don't we start with the 28th? And if Councilmember Nichols is available, then realizing, unfortunately, that Councilmember Lance won't be able to join us, but maybe as a secondary date, it could be the meeting of the 18th in November.
So, if we think we could do without the November 18th meeting, or I could even do, I was just thinking like November 12th, because that would be like between the two meetings. Mm-hmm. The 11th is a holiday, but Tuesday the 12th, I don't know if people could.
I'm available the 12th. So
pretty sure that's a Tuesday.
That's a Tuesday. I'll be returning back on the 11th, so I am available on the 12th. So
looks like I am.
So maybe that's a backup or a first.
Okay. So maybe we've got two possible dates, the 28th or the 12th. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I am hearing consensus to move forward with an event of this format approach, and so we've got a couple dates, and we'll look forward to probably an update on our first meeting in October as to outreach and just a little bit of format discussion and how we can get the word out for whichever date we land on.
Yes, I would encourage marketing's not the right word. I guess marketing of it in online avenues.
Yes, we would pursue every outreach opportunity we have.
Mm-hmm. Numerous formats and forums. Very good. So I did have one other council communication, and that was one of our housing projects at the Ford properties on 14th and Ramona is actually having an open house tomorrow night.
Drove by it. It looks good. So the doors were open.
Doors are open. Fences are down. They've got between 5 and 7. They're opening their doors for people who are looking to either rent those facilities or just to kind of come take a look. And if you time it correctly, you might see the sunset from the rooftop deck. So
it's rental or it's rental?
According to the press that I saw, it is going to be rental.
Okay.
Rental or lease. So
right.
Similar. So that is tomorrow night. Any other council communications?
I had one. Just
Oktoberfest is.
Oh, yeah, the Oktoberfest. Well,
that'll be before our next meeting, right?
Before that's
September 28th, Oktoberfest, 12 to 5. I already purchased my Stein, and I have some coins from last year that I'm planning to use.
And
Oktoberfest, the 28th. What time?
12 to 5.
12 to 5.
And actually,
noon to 5, sorry.
If you all come at noon, apparently it's the my honor to tap the first keg.
Ooh.
So if any other council members are there.
So you're going to do a keg stand.
They had a keg stand there. I got a mallet last year, so as Mayor Pro Tem, and was able to do that. So come join us for the keg tapping. Yes.
Well, I wanted to bring up one of the public commenters did mention us looking at a straw ban. And I mean, I know, time is always limited, but the environment is one of our on our list of goals, and I wonder if it's something we would want to start looking at as we're receiving these nice straws. Would it be something?
The ordinance that the IWMA is bringing forward does not specifically address straws yet. We did provide some direction to say let's implement this step first and then proceed to single-use items, straws, forks, knives, mm-hmm. so forth. So if we wanted to do single-use straws in advance of that, that would be something that we could do.
I'm heartened to know that other cities are at least slow or has already done it. I hate to be the one crafting all the language just because of the time. But I do think even if it takes us a while to get to it, it's important, you know, those of us who are right here along the ocean are real stewards of the ocean. So I don't know.
So we have a straw for a straw ordinance, I guess, for sit-down restaurants.
I think you can upon request.
Right, yeah. Upon request. So you're talking about for no plastic straws whatsoever. Is that what you mean?
I think so. I mean, I'm not even sure how far the bans go at this point or what would be advisable. I guess just to agendize it for discussion, really, and see
where people... Well, we could do... That would not be a bad idea, I guess, mm-hmm. just to kind of see where we are and how we want to go forward.
Okay. Would it make sense to fuse it with the... I'm using the word fuse a lot. Apologies. Would it make sense to combine it with the other... I mean, if that comes to us to look at it again, would it make sense to combine that ordinance to include, or would it be two separate ordinances? I'm not sure.
And I think I'm of the same mind as if we... I'm willing to agendize it, but I think it would be good to bring it back with the IWMA ordinance, since that looks like it's going to have a second reading in October. So okay. It's not going to be much further out beyond that it could come to us. But perhaps we provide direction to staff that when a agenda has appropriate time for that discussion, and we bring the IWMA ordinance back for concurrence at this council. So not to a date certain, but to a date to maybe a quarter near you, as you said.
I really like when we bundled water, we bundled housing. I think that obviously we can't always do that because there's things that need to be discussed before they can wait to be bundled with something else that's related to them. But when we can do that, I think it's nice because it puts us in the mindset of, okay, this is what we're discussing and the theme that we're going for.
Yeah. I also just wanted to announce real quickly, I heard about recently an organization called WIP Slow, Women in the Pipeline, San Luis Obispo County. So it's a nonpartisan organization, no party, but it's just encouraging women to run for office. And so it's getting women in the pipeline to keep running for office. And their first event is going to be a speaker, Mayor Karen Ray Russum from Arroyo Grande, and it's going to be this week, September 19th, 5:30 to 7, at the Congressional United Church in SLO. And you can learn more about it at whipslo.com. But I encourage people to learn and to run for office.
And I would second that as well, realizing that there's four women on this council.
Get them in the pipeline.
Exactly. Get to definitely people in the pipeline. But also, the first place that people volunteer doesn't always have to be elected office. And right. So that is planning commissions, parks and rec commissions, other commissions in cities and counties where your voice can be heard. And it can get you an opportunity to hear where and participate in volunteerism. Whether you run for office or not.
Right. And I just want to briefly say, sorry to have so many communications, thank you to Grover Beach. In my other life, I'm the PTA president at Grover Heights, and we just had our big fundraiser on Friday and raised more money than we've ever raised before, and the community support was off the charts. So I just really want to thank the public and let people know that, you know, your little elementary school that couldn't 5 years ago now can. So it's exciting. We have all these different things, robotics and dance and musical theater and things that we never thought we'd be able to give our kids. So we just really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Any other council communications?
Very
good. So before we turn it over to the city manager for reports and comments, I just wanted to announce that this Saturday there is a coastal cleanup at the end of Grand Avenue, so at 9 a.m. So if you want to join the EcoSlow group down at the end of Grand Avenue for a coastal cleanup day, I'll actually start my day as a volunteer for Kiwanis cleaning up Highway 1 in front of Grover Beach, and then that's from 8 to 9, and then from 9 to whenever, we'll go do the coastal cleanup just down the street at the end of Grand Avenue. So with that, I'll let the city manager have his reports and comments, which I'm assuming will include a movie in the park.
Nice preview. So first, before we get to the movie, let's talk about streets. We are now working on 3 active Measure K-14 street projects. The first one is the Northwest Street Project on Atlantic City and other nearby streets. This project is nearing completion. Paving is done. We are now finishing up the asphalt dike work and the driveway conforms. This project is winding its way towards completion. The other project is one that we are actively underway right now, and that's the Newport Avenue project. We're roughly halfway or so through the street work. We are now down to 10th Street. Paving is complete all the way from Oak Park down to 10th Street. It is a brand new street, as the Mayor Pro Tem knows, outside her window.
Well, yeah.
great. We've now done a number of the concrete work, the berms, the bulb outs, some of the concrete sidewalks, and now we'll be coming in with the decomposed granite parkways from Oak Park down to 14th Street. So you see a new street beginning to emerge down there, and it's going to be a beautiful street that will have plenty of accessibility for pedestrians, cyclists, narrower, safer driving lanes, and so we are continuing our march down Newport down to 4th Street here very soon. And then at the end of this week, we are launching our third Measure K-14 street project, South 16th Street. So this will be the third up amongst these three right now, identified by the council about a year ago as the next coming up online. And this will be a big one, going from Grand Avenue all the way down to the Pike. There are different treatments for different sections of the street, but it'll create a continuous, well-maintained South 16th Street when it's completed. So we're going out to bid on this project at the end of this week, and this is an example of our staff's work in accelerating the street project. There's no engineering design needed for this street. We can go out to bid for construction and bring this back to the council for award of contract and get underway with construction right around the end of the year, early next year, and begin this next project going forward. So we are actively underway with lots of streets that are going forward, and we're also doing some important engineering design work on the major streets as well, North 4th Street, West Grand Avenue, and South Oak Park.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. Any other thank you for those road updates. Anything else you want to share?
Absolutely. So just to update the council that last week the Coastal Commission unanimously approved our short-term rental regulations, praising the regulations as a good balance between visitor access and neighborhood character, and actually calling out the importance of neighborhood character verbally during the meeting. I represented the city and spoke before the commission to praise their work in regulating these rentals in a comprehensive manner, and again, the commission was very appreciative of the work that we've done. We're now moving forward towards accepting the online applications beginning October 1st. We hosted a workshop last week where we had 20 attendees from different short-term rental hosts across the community. So we have a lot of information. We have videos. We have frequently asked questions, and soon an online application coming forward on October 1st. And then lastly, to the mayor's point, we have carried out some great special events recently and look forward to some other ones coming up. Yesterday was the 31st annual Dune Run, Run, and Walk, where we had about 75 attendees on our annual event, Back to the Beach, to the Dunes, and it was a great course, great race, and everybody really enjoyed themselves. We also have our Movie in the Park coming up this Saturday night, the 21st. Mary Poppins Revisited is the movie that we'll show this Saturday, and a second movie will be in October as well. It's a great chance to help come back to our park in the evening and have a family-friendly event for all to enjoy. And also on October 5th and 6th, we have the Grover Beach Cleanup Day on Saturday the 5th at 9 o'clock at Ramona Park. More details to come. And then October 6th is the annual Cal Poly Men's and Women's Basketball Clinics. where we will bring the basketball teams to our community at Mentone Park and put on a free clinic for kids all of our community and the surrounding area from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. that morning. So a lot of great events happening. I want to thank our Park and Rec Department for all the great work they do in putting on the special events for our community.
Very good, and thank you for those comments. Any questions of the city manager?
Then I think the city manager needs to mention where he came in the Dune Run. Uh-huh. If you didn't see it on KSBY.
I supposedly won my age group in the 5K, not the 10K, just the 5K. I wasn't as brave as Councilmember Lance in running the full 10K race yesterday, but it was a great event for all.
Very good. Yes, we'll look forward to our 32nd annual one next year. So, City Attorney, any reports and comments? Thank you very much. So with that, we have no closed sessions of this item. So unless there's any other items, we are adjourned.